Good morning and welcome to the California Coastal Commission. One more time. Good morning. Welcome to the California Coastal Commission. Ms. Miller, could we please have the roll?
Commissioner Groom.
Present.
Commissioner Howell.
Oh, here.
Commissioner Jones. Commissioner Ketchum.
Present.
Commissioner Leweno.
Here.
Commissioner Ward.
Here.
Commissioner Peskin.
Present.
Commissioner Sundberg.
Here.
Chair Turnbull Sanders.
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Could we now have the agenda changes?
Sure. Good morning. First, if anyone in the audience today would like to address the commission, you do need to fill out a speaker slip and then give the completed slip to a staff member, and they are found on the entrance to the meeting room right outside here. And also, this is the time to please put your cell phones in quiet mode so as to not disturb the meeting. Thank you. And so turning to agenda changes, first item 10A, the Plains application. It's been moved to consent. Item 10B, the Dynegy application, moved to consent. Item 15A, which is the Ventura County NOID, has been moved to consent. And then we have two additional items that are not on your sheet, and that is item 16A, the City of Goleta application, also moved to consent. And then finally, item 17A, the Getachew permit amendment, is also moved to consent. And that concludes agenda changes.
Thank you. Turning it back over to staff, Mr. Ainsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That brings us to our public comments section of the commission meeting today. And today we have a little different format. We're highlighting two speakers, one from CAUSE, a grassroots environmental organization, and then we also have representatives from Cal State Channel Islands here to talk about their coastal management programs, environmental science programs. So first up, we have, it's really my pleasure to introduce Lucas Zucker, the policy director for CAUSE, and David Pollack, a board member from CAUSE. And CAUSE is a grassroots nonprofit environmental justice organization based here in Oxnard, doing great work in the Central Coast, but not only in the Central Coast, but throughout California. And also focusing on coastal issues up in this area and up and down the state. And as you all know, we're developing our environmental justice policy. We're also very much involved with the called the GARE program, which is a training for many of our state agencies to explore. I keep cutting out here. In order to bake into our culture environmental justice, but also racial equity into our culture, so our agency culture. So it's my pleasure to turn over to Lucas Zucker.
Thank you. Good morning, commissioners, staff, and community members. My name is Lucas Zucker. I'm the policy director at Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy, commonly known as CAUSE. We do community organizing and advocacy around social, economic, and environmental justice issues here in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. We've got an office in Oxnard, Ventura, Santa Barbara, Santa Paula, and Santa Maria. CAUSE was founded in 2001 out of the living wage movement and really expanded from our initial work in labor and economic inequality issues to tackle a broader scope of challenges facing our region, our communities, from immigrant rights to affordable housing to public transit and more. We started doing environmental justice work just over a decade ago with the grassroots movement to defeat the BHP Billiton LNG terminal here off the coast of Oxnard. So I want to welcome you here to the Oxnard Coast and really, really ground you in the community where we're meeting today. This is one of the areas of California where the coastal zone overlaps with the state's designated environmental justice communities according to the CalEnviro screen. So Oxnard, although technically actually we're in Port Hueneme at this moment, but Port Hueneme is kind of within Oxnard, is about 85% people of color and 75% Latino. One in three residents speak a language other than English at home, and over two in three have less than a, or sorry, two in three residents speak a language other than English at home, and one in three have less than a high school education. One in five lack health insurance. One in four children live in poverty. These numbers are even greater in South Oxnard, the neighborhood stretching east here from the base where we are now, along Oxnard's coast towards the strawberry fields of the Oxnard Plain. So the 93033 zip code of South Oxnard is actually 94% people of color, which I think is pretty rare among a coastal community. Oxnard has historically had an industrialized coastline with three power plants, a Superfund toxic waste site, a port, and two naval bases. It has many neighborhoods above the 90th percentile in asthma rates in California. And as one of the lowest-lying coastal areas in the state, it's threatened from climate change by sea level rise and saltwater intrusion into our agricultural fields, which make up the largest source of employment here in the city. However, this community has some incredibly unique assets. It actually lies between the largest remaining coastal wetlands in Southern California on one side, the largest remaining free-flowing river in Southern California on the other, and some of the most fertile soil in the entire world. I think one of the other things that makes Oxnard so unique and incredible is that it is home to one of the few places left on the California coast that's really maintained a large working-class community of color that hasn't been displaced by luxury development. And this this community really has a vision for environmental justice for Oxnard to bring a cleaner environment and a healthier community. So over the last decade, we've seen an incredible movement for environmental justice here. I think really the starting point of that was the LNG issue, where the largest mining company in the world, BHP Billiton, proposed a liquefied natural gas terminal off the coast of Oxnard that would have been the largest source of air pollution in Ventura County. So huge opposition to that over the course of a couple years. Ultimately, 3,000 people came out to the State Lands Commission hearing here in Oxnard, and you know, final decision that was rejected. Over the last years, we've also worked, caused local leaders work to advance the cleanup of the Halico Superfund site. Halico was a metal recycler that kind of just essentially left their toxic waste dump on the beach. Went into bankruptcy. That's been sitting there. Right in South Oxnard, and about a decade ago, we were able to get it designated as an EPA Superfund site, and so it's currently in the process of doing that kind of feasibility study and for the remediation of that site. It's also we've got the largest one of the largest wetlands restorations in the state here, and so CAUSE really worked for years to make sure that process, as it moves forward, didn't just engage wildlife enthusiasts and conservation experts, really the local community and the working class immigrant community that lives here and is so often disconnected from those processes, and really I think in many ways feels cut off from the coast, even though it is a coastal community, feels cut off from the coast by a lot of the industrial development that separates the neighborhoods from the coastline. And a community that really faces serious health disparities from both pollution, but also a lack of access to outdoor recreational green space. And so that's a lot of the interest in what the restoration can bring, not just to the local, you know, habitat, but also for the local community. And so most recently, CAUSE partnered with the State Coastal Conservancy to survey about 300 South Oxnard residents related to this project and what they'd like to see. And we're continuing to engage residents in that restoration project. We're also working, you know, with the city, which is updating its local coastal plan, with a real vision of an Oxnard coast that's more deindustrialized, without some of the power plants and other industrial facilities that we've had historically, more coastal access, and really more resilience to climate change and other threats. And then the latest turning point, really in pursuing this vision, arose as the State Water Board mandated the either retrofitting or closure of once through cooling plants all up and down the coast of California, but particularly the two we have of the three power plants here on the Oxnard coast. Power plant operator NRG had proposed a new power plant, the Puente Project, which was fiercely opposed by thousands of community members over the last nearly 4 years now. Folks who signed petitions, spoke at countless hearings over the years, lobbied elected representatives, and traveled to Sacramento and San Francisco to kind of make their case to state agencies. And I want to thank the Coastal Commission for taking a unanimous stance against that project, which was part of the process that helped persuade the California Energy Commission. is how we got to where we are now, where that power plant has now been suspended as SoCal Edison goes through a process to seek clean energy projects distributed throughout the region instead as an alternative, which we're really hoping will end a generations-long legacy of all of Ventura County's power plants being concentrated in Oxnard, which we see as just a prime example of environmental injustice. So as this legacy of environmental injustice in Oxnard begins to turn, the community faces new challenges. What will happen to old industrial facilities whose shareholders profited from their operation on the coast for decades, but whose operations, whose owners can now spin them off into subsidiary companies and put them into bankruptcy and kind of, remove any legal liability for their cleanup? And as restorations of this important coastal habitat move forward, how do we ensure that the disadvantaged community who is intended to benefit from a healthy environment is able to still afford to live here once this restoration is complete? And as Oxnard kind of deindustrializes coast, what does that mean for housing? So we really believe the Coastal Commission has an important role to play in support of the vision that communities like Oxnard have through meaningful, bottom-up, effective public engagement partnered with local community groups and with the resources to reach marginalized populations. The Commission can better understand the needs of communities like Oxnard. The Commission can continue to stand alongside communities like Oxnard who are fighting powerful industries and multinational corporations for clean air for their children and a healthy environment of their neighborhoods. The Commission can stand alongside communities like Oxnard as they also fight to stay in their own communities after those environmental justice battles are won. And then the real estate industry kind of eyes these newly restored coastlines for potential displacement and gentrification. And by taking a comprehensive look at coastal development and conservation and the broad spectrum of ways that people are tied socially and economically to the coast, not just who own beachfront homes, but who live in nearby areas and are tied to the coastline in different ways, the Commission can encourage targeted community benefits that help protect and enhance economic security and opportunity in communities like Oxnard. And through long-term planning, the Commission can help communities like Oxnard prepare for the impacts of climate change, as communities will be among the most impacted and have the least resources to adapt. So CAUSE really looks forward to, we hope to continue our involvement in the Coastal Commission's process of developing its environmental justice policy. And we look forward to continuing to work with all of you for social, economic, and environmental justice here in Oxnard and throughout the California coast. I want to introduce David Pollack, our board treasurer.
Thank you, and welcome to Port Hueneme in Ventura County. I just wanted to give you a quick perspective. In addition to being on the board for CAUSE, I'm also city councilman for the city of Moore Park, which is in eastern Ventura County, and I'm on the air pollution control board for Ventura County. Ventura County is probably quite a bit different than other counties that you find along the coastline, in that our highest per capita income is on the east side of the county, in Moore Park in particular, in Thousand Oaks, is where you find the higher per capita income. And it's along the coastlines that you're finding the poor and more disadvantaged communities like Oxnard. So it's kind of flipped of what you see in Los Angeles County and probably most counties along the coastline. The reason I bring this up, and it points out the reason for organizations like CAUSE that need to help advocate for these communities. You know, up in my community, they tried to put a power plant in when Edison was still considering putting a peaker plant in, and the community rose up and drove them out of town. Oxnard has more trouble doing that. Obviously, with two power plants on the coastline and a Superfund site, how would that happen? But Oxnard and Ventura, in particular, are vulnerable already. We have the traffic coming into the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach make their closest pass to the shore as they come down through the channel here. In fact, on the Air Pollution Control Board, we've actually instituted a program to pay the ships to slow down to cut their nitrogen oxide emissions more than in half. So Oxnard is a beautiful community, but it's also a vulnerable community. And thank you for coming here to hear us out.
Thank you. Are there any commissioner comments? Okay. Thank you very much for that presentation. As we move forward to work more on environmental justice, the long-term planning for communities that are particularly in need of sustainable protection will be important. The next speaker that we have is Sean Anderson and Kiki Patch from Cal State University Channel Islands, professors of Environmental Science and Resource Management Program.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to provide a little context here, and I really appreciate the, Sean and Kiki to come down and present their really exciting programs in coastal management and environmental science. As you know, we have been trying to build partnerships with our public universities across the state. To help us deal with the burgeoning issues regarding, and help us with the science and policy surrounding climate change and sea level rise and issues that we're facing. Another important component of this partnership and relationship with the universities, particularly those universities with diverse student populations, is recruit future staff for our agency, but also to build future coastal advocates, environmental professionals, and politicians who care about our coastline, our environment. I am a product of Cal State San Bernardino, and if it wasn't for public universities, affordable public university, I simply wouldn't be here. So this is incredibly important to me as a director of this agency. We have a number of students here today as well in the audience and out in the hallway. They have some posters of their great research and work that they're doing with regard to environmental science and coastal management. So if you could all take a glance at that, they've done some great work. And so I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Anderson.
Thanks, Jack. Thank you. And thanks for the opportunity, you guys, to speak to you today. This is going to be a sort of mile high, really quick, just jumping through a bunch of slides here to give you guys a sense of the types of projects we do at Cal State Channel Islands. So our program is the longest named program. It's called Environmental Science and Resource Management, and it doesn't fit on any application fields ever. So we usually just call ourselves the ESRM department. But we do a tremendous amount. And just to follow up really quickly on Jack's comment, I was at a big famous research university for many years, and it wasn't really floating my boat, personally speaking. I do mostly applied stuff. And I was leaving academia, and my wife actually found the job ad for this place about 15 years ago. And we both applied, and they foolishly hired us both. And this university really has reinvigorated my faith in public higher ed and the service that we do to our community and to the statewide. Almost all the projects that we do here are begun with reaching out to the community, and that provides the initial grain of sand for us to start these things. So everything I'm going to tell you today comes from different needs in different parts of our region. So the first shot right there, that's the start of the Refugio oil spill. So that's 12 hours after the pipeline broke, and we were the first team on site. And those are all of our undergraduates doing this monitoring, in this case, looking at the pre-tarring that was about to happen on this particular beach. That's El Capitan. Okay, the next slide, pretty please. Or do I have the controllers? Cool. So just to get everybody oriented. Oh, thank you, sir. So to get everybody oriented, so this is a couple months ago. This is during the start of the Thomas Fire, and our campus is in purple right there on the mainland, so we're in Camarillo. But then we also have our offshore facility, our Santa Rosa Island Research Station, and we always seem to be in the thick of things whenever these events unfold. Do I not have the number next? Can you guys hit the next one for me? This guy not. Oh, there we go. Okay, cool. So real quickly, we're different. Thank you, sir. We really are different. Having been at many institutions, many different places, our campus was begun in 2002. We didn't take our first freshman until 2004, so we're very much the baby in the CSU system. We have various policies, various facilities, and partnerships, and really a unique combination of talent that allows us to do these things I'm going to tell you about in a second. That picture right behind you is the old milking facility for the site, And turns out that was a perfect place for us to fly drones when the FAA grounded the rest of the state. So that was technically inside. So we could train students how to fly outside and still be legal. We have an educational focus at our campus, which is different than most of the universities I've been associated with. And it actually allows for a lot of the things that I'm going to show you and provides a venue to attack a lot of these challenges that I'll show you in a second. We mostly do applied coastal research, and we have a strong, strong focus on interdisciplinarity. For us, interdisciplinarity means environmental justice, economics, chemistry, history, all that stuff. It doesn't mean biochemistry and physical chemistry. It means truly interdisciplinary collaborations. Most of our projects start off with an educational component or a particular applied grant. In this case, we're in the fourth year of this collaboration with NOAA. This is a collaboration with NOAA, the National Park Service, and a whole bunch of other folks. This is our BWEP program, which is focused initially primarily on creating year-long curriculum for our fifth and sixth grade students in some of our schools in the Oxnard School District. Using that as a jumping off platform, it's been, in addition to just helping educate kids, it's allowed us to bring students out to the islands that have never camped before, have never been out of the cell phone range, all that kind of great stuff, and give them that experience. It's also allowed us to build up our robotic fleet. So through this program, we build robots with kids. And through that expertise, we now build robots for NGOs in East Africa. We send robots to the South Pacific to help small island nations. All of this, again, starting with this effort of trying to educate our local kids and creating tools that are useful to a whole bunch of folks. We do a lot of traditional stuff like this. This is shorebird conservation work at Ormond Beach, all the stuff you'd think about, saving the birds, monitoring the birds, having public outreach days. We also do more traditional things like marine debris. So we have long-term projects looking at the deposition of pollution on offshore beaches, on nearshore beaches, and we increasingly do a lot with microplastic. Again, this is all undergraduate research doing this. This is all of our students that are the drivers for this. So for example, we've sampled 51 beaches across the state of California. Every single beach is loaded with microplastics. 40 populations and 40 beaches looking at the sand crab populations that reside on those beaches. Every single population has ingested microplastics. And so we're now following this up the food web to try to estimate what the health risk is for people and other folks across the state of California. Here's a quick example of what we've done with some stuff with the Refugio spill. On the right is what you'd see in a traditional lab. The right is an example of looking at the toxicity of this oil to some of our critters. In this case, these are little baby crabs. And on the right image is too far away. But on the right image, those guys are healthy and were exposed to clean water, no problem. The guys on the left were exposed to tar and are developmentally delayed. So there's significant impacts to that population. But again, rather than just doing the traditional biology or geomorphological stuff, which we do, we also try to couple this stuff to make it as useful to you folks and other users as well. So on the left-hand side there, that's data from 33 beaches during the Refugio oil spill. We went up, in addition to doing our environmental monitoring, we also do surveys. So we talked to many hundreds of folks, and we basically said, hey, how far did you drive? So on the x-axis there, that's how much tarring. Zero is a beach that didn't get any tar. Six got a lot of tar. And what you see on the top graph, the orange bars, the bars are all roughly the same. That's how far people drove to a beach that during that early part of the summer. There's no statistical difference. So people were coming to a beach driving the same distance if it was a heavily tarred beach or a lightly tarred beach. But on the bottom, that question is how much money are they spending either the past week if they've been here or are they intending to spend the upcoming week? And that's strongly correlated with the amount of oiling. So these kinds of data really help us interpret not just the ecological impact of things like spills, but also what it means for our community. And then we do all kinds of other interesting surveys. This is an annual survey we've been doing since 2005, but it really has been quite rigorous since 2007. We survey between 1,000 and 1,500 people every fall, Santa Barbara, Los Angeles, Ventura counties. And we ask them a whole series of questions about coastal management. I just pulled out a couple that might be of interest to you. On the right is, do you recognize this agency? And you guys lost out to Coast Guard. Sorry, people recognize the Coast Guard more than you guys. But you're number two. And Coast Guard and Coastal Commission are the only agencies that show more than 50% recognition every single year. So you guys are 61% of people have heard of the Coastal Commission. So Merry Christmas. And then the beige ones there, those are two of our also quite active land acquisition and management agencies, Santa Monica Mountains Conservancies and their sister agency, the MRCA. They're obviously half or a fourth of the recognition that you guys have. We ask about the public's impression of different management things and what their priority is. So on the left-hand side there, this is, they're asked to rank every year, and this is 1 through 4. So 1 is the highest priority, highest threat, highest thing we should deal with. 4 is the lowest. And what we've seen from year to year to year is everybody thinks pollution is horrible. So pollution ranks a very high priority for the general public. Pretty much everything else is all grouped together. So the public thinks that the biggest threat is toxins, is exposure to bad air or whatever. If you ask the general public, are we doing a good job managing our coast? 43% say no. So the most common, and again, this is consistent from year to year to year, 43% of people say no. But when you ask them specific management questions, and we have some posters on this out there if you guys are curious, when you ask specific management questions, they're much more positive. So if we ask them about the establishment of Channel Islands National Park, plastic bag bans, things like that, but when asked them the general level, they're like, I don't think so. What we find also consistently is 40% of our populations in these three counties go to the coast at least weekly, and 75% of our population go at least monthly. And we have data as to which beaches, which areas they're recreating in, et cetera. This is a relatively new thing. We've been doing this for the last 5 years. This is an effort to provide better guidance for you guys and other folks, which is a rapid assessment of beach condition. So this integrates human stressors, pollution, ecological condition, et cetera. And we're creating an index of our beaches. We primarily monitor about 40 beaches, mostly in Southern California, but we're developing the metrics so that it can be applied to any beach throughout the state. And you can use this just in general as a index, or we could use it if we're doing an individual project to see if this project of nourishment or whatever improves the condition of the site. This is a project where we are working with various folks along the coast. The guy on the right there is really into beach music. There's lifeguards, all kinds of folks. And we do interviews with these folks, and we have all these resources up online free for anyone to get an understanding of how different communities perceive the coast. It's called Beaches on the Edge. We're just updating. Dr. Kiki Patch is just about done with the newest updating of a statewide armoring database for the entire coast. So she generated the first one. And then you guys with the Coastal Commission generated a version roughly around the same time. And we're updating this. And so when we're done, this will be available to you guys. And all manner of riprap and everything has been categorized for the entirety of the California coast. Again, all done with students. I'll probably just go through these next two really quickly here, the next few, because I'm a professor and I'll talk for 17 hours. But so this is an example. We use a lot of drones these days. So we build these units, we build these robots, our students operate these guys, all kinds of stuff. Picture on the upper left is right after the Thomas Fire. That's right behind the Ventura City Hall. We discovered a whole series of archaeological ruins that had not been known before. The fire exposed them. So we used our drones to map them in high precision to sub-centimeter accuracy so that whatever mud flows or whatever we have this summer, this spring, we can go back and the archaeologists can properly document this when the rains end. We use, a lot of these tools we use in our teaching, but are really valuable for you guys and in rapid response. The next picture is a citizen science animal kill map. We've been accurately trying to model how many critters were killed in the Thomas Fire, as well as climate change emissions and a bunch of other stuff. Then the lower left, that was a rapid website we created with folks from across the country. We were the key movers there, but a rapid citizen resource. So if citizens could get what was going on with the fire in real time. Again, tools that we use in our classroom that were really useful. If that video was playing, you'd see a real-time 3D. That is Refugio Beach, and that black mass is all the dumping of the sediment from Montecito. So we have very accurate estimates of that and are monitoring that on the beach as well. We do this up and down the coast. This is one of our students, or this is actually Dr. Kiki Patch. We're looking at the dynamics of mouth opening and closings and doing a lot with coastal change. In this case, this is Ventura Harbor and looking at the efficacy of dredging. This is one of our students who's looking at coastal erosion down in San Diego. So we're getting very accurate measures of how quickly these bluffs are retreating. Again, this is all done with our flying units, our robotic units, all operated by students, all processed by students. And Dr. Kiki Patch is the queen of littoral cells here in this part of the world. And so she did the original sediment budget for these areas. And she's now working at Broad Beach and trying to estimate the sand erosion there. Our newest colleague, Dr. Dan Reinemann, is looking specifically at a bunch of things. But in this case, sea level rise and the culture that is lost. Normally, we talk about sea level rise as the fiscal impact, which is an important thing to be sure. Infrastructure impact. In this case, he's actually interviewed surfers up and down the coast and looked at the cultural value of the coast. So who taught you how to surf? My dad. Who taught your dad how to surf? My grandpa. Okay, so this place has cultural value. And then using modern sea level rise estimation techniques, we're predicting which of those surfing resources will be harmed under sea level rise, which ones will be improved. And so we can talk about that as another metric to engage the conversation with some folks that maybe are perhaps more reluctant to talk about sea level rise and things like that. Also doing a lot with looking at underserved communities and how easy it is for them to get to the coast. So this is a statewide effort where we're looking at how easy is it for folks to get to the coast? Are there lodgings? Is there affordable parking, et cetera? And looking at the demographics of these regions. And what you find is that the coast is, no surprise, on average, is whiter than we would expect on a random chunk of a California property, less Hispanic, less Black, et cetera. And so so the next step with this is to actually look at this more specifically in some of these areas where we think we could make some policy recommendations and see how we can improve the access to our all-important coastal sites. And then lastly, we are launching a professional science master's program because we've been asked for so many years. And so this is going to be a program that continues a lot of these themes, but is primarily aimed at working professionals, so maybe staff members of yours or folks in the naval base, whatever, working professionals. They'll both get, it's a two-year program, they'll both get content exposure, but also they'll be paired with a mentor. So if people are in a public agency, they'll be paired with a public agency mentor. If they're a park service person, a park service mentor. So folks can get early career advice as well as sort of the technical new skills with drones and GIS and conflict resolution and all these things that we think are really, really key to solve problems. So I've jabbered on a bunch here, but most of this stuff is on one or more of our websites. You guys are welcome to check it out. Our main website for our program is www.esrm.zone. We don't use .com very much because we're too poor. We can't buy those domains. So ESRM Zone is sort of the catch-all for everybody. And then many of us have our own individual websites, blogs. We have an oil spill blog. We have a drone blog where we and our students actively post and share our research. So you guys are welcome to check it out. Please come check out, meet with our students outside, and really looking forward to talking with you guys more and seeing how we can help you guys more. So thank you so much for the opportunity. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Does that conclude your presentation?
That's it.
Great.
That's
thank you so much for that update and all of that valuable information. Well, I know I was feverishly writing notes and glad to see that there was a website that we could go to retrieve some of that information that will help inform our work tremendously. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And that will conclude public comment for this portion of the meeting. We ask that the public please, this is going in and out a little bit, ask that the public please bear with us. Today we had some scheduling challenges. The meeting is not anticipated to go extensively long today, and so we will have the opportunity for public comment at the conclusion of our regularly scheduled agenda items.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, we do have a pretty short agenda today, so the public will have plenty of time to comment at the end of it. So I turn it over to Allison Detmer.
All right. Thank you. So first up today is the North Coast portion of today's agenda, and we can actually move right to item 7A because there is no Deputy Director report this month. So this is a Del Norte County LCP amendment that would amend the implementation plan by rezoning an undeveloped parcel that is currently split zoned Resource Conservation Area 1 and Rural Residential Agriculture. So under the LCP, before any parcel that is zoned Resource Conservation Area 1 is developed, detailed delineations of the boundaries of the wetland on the parcel must be conducted. And so this rezoning process zones the very precise areas of the wetland and any buffer surrounding buffer area, and it would adjust, if necessary, the boundaries of the adjoining area zoned for residential. So we believe that the proposed rezoning is fully inclusive of all the wetlands and buffer areas that are needed here from adjacent development, and the proposed rezoning would also allow for a home on the northeastern portion of the parcel. So staff is recommending that the commission find that the IP amendment as submitted conforms with the land use plan, and the motion is found on page 4 of the staff report.
Thank you, Commissioner Sundberg. Before we do that, are there any ex partes? Seeing none, Commissioner Sundberg.
Thank you. I move that the commission reject implementation plan amendment number LCP-1DNC-170019-1 as submitted by the County of Del Norte, and I recommend a no vote.
Second. Would you like to speak to your motion?
There's been no controversy with this one, so I think it's pretty easy.
To your second, Commissioner Groom. Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous no vote? Seeing none, we do approve that implementation plan. It's again a double negative, so thank you.
So that takes us to item 8 and the Deputy Director report for energy. And the report does contain one de minimis waiver and one immaterial amendment. We haven't received any comments on these, and so we're seeking your concurrence to grant them.
Any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we do concur. Thank you.
Great. And just one more informational item before we move on is today we distributed to you a copy of a letter that we posted today from staff in response to the Trump administration's proposal for that 5-year oil and gas leasing program. If you recall, last month, you as the commission adopted a letter, and we sent that in February 8th, and today we're sending the staff letter in support of the commission's opposition to further oil and gas leasing. And it's quite lengthy when you read it, and it basically, you know, kind of goes through the why. All the whys of why we are urging the administration to remove California for that program. And so with that, we can, I mean, unless you have some questions, we can move on to item 9. And so that is the consent calendar for energy. As I reported earlier, we moved items 10A and 10B to consent. The applicants are in agreement with both of these staff recommendations. We haven't received any other comments. We therefore recommend you approve them under the consent calendar.
Are there any ex partes? No. Do I have a motion?
Motion to move the consent calendar.
Second.
Would either of the commissioners like to speak to the motion? Is there any unwillingness for unanimous approval of the consent calendar? Seeing none, we do approve the consent calendar.
Thank you. And that takes us then to item 11, and Larry Simone of the Commission's Federal Consistency Unit will give the staff presentation.
If we could have the first slide, please. Commissioners, this is a consistency determination submitted by the Corps of Engineers for the Malibu Creek Ecosystem Restoration Project. If we could have the next slide, slide 2. Okay, now we go to the next slide, please. Thanks. An addendum to the staff report was prepared and posted to the Commission's website this past Wednesday. It includes staff responses to comments contained in 5 of the letters received, and which also are included in the addendum. The central features of the project are the removal of the 92-year-old 100-foot-high ridge dam and spillway on Malibu Creek, and the concurrent removal of approximately 780,000 cubic yards of sediment that is impounded behind the dam. Next slide, please. The project is expected to take 8 years to complete, and the Corps estimates that should the project be authorized and funded by Congress, construction would commence no sooner than the year 2025. The next slide, please. During years 2 through 4 of project construction, approximately 278,000 cubic yards of clean sandy sediments would be excavated and trucked to Ventura Harbor. transferred onto bottom dump barges and towed to a location just down coast of Malibu Pier and placed in nearshore water several hundred feet offshore. The remaining sediments and the concrete rubble from the dam and the spillway would be trucked to the Calabasas landfill in year one and in years 4 through 7. Removal of the dam and the sediment will restore the buried segment of Malibu Creek, will restore a more natural sediment transport regime to the creek, improve the aquatic and riparian habitat in stream reaches both above and below Ringe Dam, and provide 18 miles of restored spawning and rearing habitat for the endangered Southern California steelhead. Next slide, please. Sediment samples were tested, and approximately one-third of the impounded sediment was found physically and chemically suitable for placement in the nearshore. Additional testing to reconfirm the suitability for nearshore placement and to determine the potential to beneficially reuse more of the impounded sediments at offshore and onshore locations will take place throughout the excavation process. Next slide, please. The nearshore placement zone was selected to avoid sensitive marine habitats, and monitoring during placement will ensure that those habitats are avoided. The sands will be placed in the nearshore zone in water depths, allowing the sands to eventually move shoreward and down coast. Next slide, please. The project does hold the potential to create slope instability during and after excavation of the impounded sediments behind Ringe Dam. The Corps acknowledges that necessary geotechnical studies will take place during the future pre-construction, engineering, and design phase of the project. The Corps is committed to submit the results to the Commission of those future geotechnical reports that will evaluate the hazards and that will identify required stabilization and mitigation measures. The Commission will then schedule a public hearing to review the reports and determine whether the proposed project remains consistent with the geologic hazard policy of the Coastal Act. Next slide, please. Significant flood hazards currently exist downstream of the dam, as water and sediment are no longer trapped behind the dam, but instead flow over the spillway in the dam. This photo was taken in 2005 and illustrates a 5 to 10 year flood event. The hydraulic analysis undertaken during the feasibility study phase determined that the project would not increase downstream flood hazards. As the project advances into the more detailed pre-construction engineering and design phase, the Corps states that additional hydraulic and sediment modeling work will be undertaken to either confirm the feasibility stage conclusions or to modify the project to ensure that it would not increase downstream flood hazards. In addition, it is at this future stage of project design, rather than currently in the feasibility stage, that any necessary flood hazard reduction, mitigation, and monitoring measures would be identified and designed by the Corps for the project. And again, the Commission will have the ability to review in a public hearing the future modeling results and the flood hazard reduction and mitigation measures to ensure that the project remains consistent with the flood hazard policy of the Coastal Act. I noted earlier that this consistency determination is before you 7 years prior to the estimated 2025 construction start date. This time lag is typical for Corps of Engineers projects that are in the feasibility phase and which must undergo federal consistency review at that time. The Commission has long concurred with Corps projects that are at the feasibility phase of design, including the Matilla Dam removal project in Ventura County and the more recent Encinitas-Solana Beach Coastal Storm Damage Reduction Project in San Diego County. Consistent with several of the comment letters we received, the Commission staff and the Corps acknowledge that much additional information and analysis must be produced by the Corps during the pre-construction, engineering, and design phase prior to the Corps making a final decision on approving and constructing the project. However, these additional studies cannot be authorized and undertaken until the final environmental impact statement is approved by the Chief of the Engineers of the Corps and the project has received congressional funding for the pre-construction, engineering, and design phase work. And the Corps is required to complete its federal consistency process as an element of this final environmental impact statement. Hence, the CED is before you today. Construction of the project is not scheduled to start until 2025 at the earliest, leaving adequate time for the Corps to complete the required future studies, to modify the project if necessary, to incorporate impact avoidance and minimization measures into the final project design, and to evaluate whether the project remains then consistent with the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. Throughout this future process, the Commission retains its statutory ability to conclude on its own that changes to the project have occurred and to then request that the Corps take appropriate remedial action, including submission of a supplemental consistency determination. In addition, it's important to note that the Corps has stated in its current consistency determination that it will submit a supplemental consistency determination to the Commission in the future should the project change during the pre-construction engineering and design phase, or if new or different effects on coastal resources are identified. And finally, the federal consistency procedures ensure that the Commission will have the opportunity to review all the future studies, and the public will likewise be able to review those studies and participate in the Commission's public hearing processes related to those studies in the same manner in which the public is participating at this current feasibility study phase. With these procedures in place and based on the information currently available, the staff recommends the Commission concur with the Corps' consistency determination and find the proposed project is consistent with the applicable Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act. The motion and resolution are on page 5 of the staff report. Representatives from the Corps are here today to discuss the project, and that concludes my comments.
Thank you. Do we have any ex partes? Okay. At this time, I just would like to go over a little bit of housekeeping. We will have a presentation from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. That will include a presentation from Ed DeMesa and potentially Susie Ming. And we have a rebuttal speaker, Jim Hutchinson and Suzanne Good. And then I have a number of speaker cards from the Corps along with Parks for questions. And we would like to give you about 3 minutes to make your presentation and then allow you to reserve about 6 minutes for rebuttal. Would that be sufficient?
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. And if you could state your name for the record as well.
Thank you. Good morning, Commissioners. My name is Ed Mesa. I'm the Chief Planning Division for the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in Los Angeles. We, along with our partner, the California Department of Parks and Recreation, are prepared to provide a presentation on our recommended plan for the Malibu Creek Ecosystem Restoration Project. However, in the interest of time, we will submit the presentation for record. We appreciate the thorough presentation provided by Mr. Larry Simone and are in agreement with the California Coastal Commission staff recommendation and addendum. This project is significant to the future ecosystem restoration of this watershed and coastal area. It would restore 18 miles of aquatic habitat, connectivity for steelhead and other aquatic species. It will restore a migratory corridor for mammals and other terrestrial species and beneficially reuse sediment in a highly urbanized California, Southern California. We are committed to coordinating with the California Coastal Commission during design and construction, and it is our independent obligation to ensure continued compliance with the California Coastal Management Program. We would take the offer of 5 minutes of rebuttal time in order to address any comments and concerns raised during the comment period that follows this presentation. In addition, our team from the Corps and Parks are here to answer any questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next speaker will be Jeff, looks like Follini, it's a little difficult to read. Followed by John J. Waller, followed by Ken Ehrlich.
Good morning, it's Jeff Follert, and I'm a resident of 23247 Palm Canyon Lane in Malibu, and I'm currently the president of the Sarah Canyon Property Owners Association, which is the neighborhood most people refer to as Sarah Retreat. We are an association of approximately 110 properties, many of which are located in the currently mapped FEMA flood zone along Malibu Creek. We're concerned deeply about the potential for the increased risk and amplified impact from flooding as a result of the removal of the Ringe Dam. the Cross Creek Bridge, which is a private bridge, is an approved, permitted private bridge, is located on one of our neighborhood's emergency required access easements, and numerous properties are directly within the flood zone. On February 17th, 2017, a year ago about, in the last major rain event, the bridge was overrun and numerous properties suffered damage. The creek bed elevation, and I think this is important when we talk about sediment transport, increased 2 to 4 feet both above and below the bridge. This bridge, by the way, is about 2.5 miles downstream from the Ringe Dam and about a half a mile upstream, if you will, from the Pacific Coast Highway bridge that you're familiar with. And it's located at an elevation which is a bit lower than the actual flood area. Some of you may recall that this bridge was permitted here and at a number of agencies when it was done, and we're deeply concerned about the integrity of it. It, by the way, was put in to replace an aged Arizona crossing, which was, you know, an impediment to the steelhead trout migration. So we were pleased to be part of that improvement. But we suggest there are several property and human life impact and safety risks that have either been omitted, underanalyzed, or pushed off to some future time in the Army Corps of Engineers proposal and the Coastal Commission staff report. These include an inadequate sediment transport analysis, the increase in flooding risks due to landsliding and the adjacent existing landslide on Malibu Canyon Road, the increase in flooding risk due to flood elevation changes greater than 1 foot, that's an important number, the expanded and amplified risk to Cross Creek Bridge and FEMA flood zone mapped properties due to sediment transport and stream bed elevation change. The failure to minimize risks to life and property in high-risk areas with no real mitigation plan at this point. Sarah Canyon property owners request that the California Coastal Commission set aside the recommendation of staff and return this report and its request for approved consistency determination to the Army Corps of Engineers and State Parks for further analysis and study. Any future mitigation plans must be reviewed and analyzed before a consistency determination is approved by the Coastal Commission. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Mr. Waller?
Thank you. Good morning. John Waller, W-A-L-L-E-R. I'm here as a representative of my clients, Rod and Nancy Sanders and Bill Wilnoker. A little tough for me to pronounce that one. They are both residents, or they're all residents of the Sarah Retreat area. They have already experienced flood damage as a result of the recent rains last February. Those pictures of those were presented as part of our submission a week ago Friday. This is something that requires significant mitigation to make sure that the existing flooding doesn't get worse, which will cause even more damage to a variety of property owners in the Cross Creek area, in the Sarah Retreat area. We're hopeful that this is not something that simply gets kicked down the road in terms of determining what mitigation measures will be taken. Those measures need to be identified, specified, and analyzed now as opposed to some point in the future to determine whether they're truly adequate. The goal of trying to preserve this area, to protect it, to find new habitat for steelhead trout, all of those are laudable goals. But at the same time, the property owners who are downstream, who are already seriously affected, deserve to have their properties protected. It's inconsistent for those properties not to be protected as part of this process. I don't want to take too much time here today because some of it has already been stated. I appreciate the comments that were made by Mr. Simone in terms of where things currently are and what's happened. I haven't seen the draft that you said was put up on the website on Wednesday addressing comments. I'll take a look at that. But the real concern amongst my clients, and I think amongst the residents of Sarah Retreat as a whole, is that their issues be addressed now, not at some unspecified point in the future. We want to find some means of protecting everyone, including the steelhead trout, but we need to have that done before this vote is taken, not after. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Acting Chair, my name's Ken Ehrlich, but before my time starts, I just want to extend my apologies to the Executive Director. A few moments ago when I handed in my speaker card, I just greeted him to say hello. I had no idea he was on the mic. So I'm completely embarrassed, didn't mean to interrupt the Executive Director's report, and my sincere apologies. Now, if I may start with that introduction, my name's Ken Ehrlich. I'm counsel for the Sarah Canyon Property Owners Association. I would submit to this commission that these homeowners are looking for an advocate here. We have teamed up with the city of Malibu in hopes that someone from the city is here today, but we don't see them, looking for someone trying to protect this community of 105 homes. We submit that if this were a private developer trying to do this project before you, there's no doubt that your staff would require all of these geotechnical and geological and landslide studies to be done now before this commission analyzes the project. We completely appreciate Mr. Simone's analysis and your staff's response to all of our comments, but the fact of the matter is that these are real environmental impacts. They have real effects on personal safety and property safety, as well as the habitat itself. They need to be analyzed now. And we appreciate also the fact that this falls within the federal process to have this analysis done now and to have this analysis or this determination brought before you now. However, there is still no reason why the applicant didn't commit to completing all these studies now and have all these studies now so the Coastal Commission staff can evaluate them. The environment is the same now as when it does its pre-engineering studies. Nothing's going to change between now and the 7 or 8 years before this is all done, except for potentially funding. If they don't have the funding now, they should go get it. But it's appropriate for this commission to have all this data from these downstream effects of either the 8-year process of reducing the wall and then carving out the sediment and what effect that'll have on downstream property owners. It's appropriate, again, to have it now so you can make your coastal zone consistency determination. I appreciate all of your time and attention. And again, we submit that treat this applicant no different than you would treat a private applicant. Make the analysis be completed now so you can evaluate it for everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Ryan Searcy, followed by Candace Menigan and Graham Hamilton.
One moment, my screen just locked. Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to speak before you today. My name is Ryan Searcy, and I'm a staff scientist for Heal the Bay. We are a nonprofit based in Santa Monica, dedicated to keeping the Santa Monica Bay and its watersheds safe, healthy, and clean. And we represent tens of thousands of citizens in Los Angeles County. Today, I'm here to echo our written comments provided by our watershed scientist, Dr. Catherine Pease. And that is that Heal the Bay supports the consistency determination for the removal of Range Dam Arch and Spillway as described in the locally preferred plan. Heal the Bay has been actively working in the Malibu Creek watershed since 1998, and we've collected extensive data showing that Malibu Creek and many of its tributaries are impaired for numerous pollutants and physical habitat parameters, such as barriers and dams. Heal the Bay has also been engaged in the stakeholder process for the removal of Range Dam for many years, and we urge the Coastal Commission to support the consistency determination for the LPP to allow this important project to move forward. Heal the Bay supports Alternative 2B2, the LPP, because it provides the most environmental benefits while minimizing negative impacts. This alternative will improve habitat for federally endangered Southern California steelhead trout and many other species that utilize the riparian corridor. It'll prevent the need for flood walls downstream. It avoids placing sediment on natural resources, specifically surf grass habitat, and it includes removal of upstream barriers and tributaries, opening up many additional miles of high-quality stream habitat. That being said, we do recommend some additional changes to the final project. Specifically, we recommend the impounded sediment be reused as much as possible with prioritization for beach nourishment.
We recommend the strong mitigation and best management practices measures to be established to minimize the spread of invasive species. And finally, we also request that monitoring be conducted throughout the project to assess and detect impacts to water quality, biological health, and physical habitat. In summary, we support the consistency determination, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. We actually have a speaker card next for Reva Feldman.
Good morning, Chair and members of the Commission. Thank you for letting me speak this morning. My name is Reva Feldman, and I'm the city manager for the City of Malibu. And overall, the City of Malibu is requesting that additional studies be conducted prior to final approval of this project. The City Council did discuss the project last week, and we did submit a comment letter, which hopefully you have received. The dam has always served to dissipate energy for the downstream reaches of Malibu Creek. Without it, the city is concerned that the Malibu Civic Center area will flood, which could not only cause severe property damage, but create other issues as well. The Sarah Retreat residential community is located adjacent to the terminus of Malibu Creek, and the neighborhood has only two ingress and egress areas. Downstream flooding could severely impact the public safety of our residents if these access points are flooded. It's projected that the removal of the dam will increase the flood zone by more than a foot, but no mitigation measures have yet to be proposed, which is required by FEMA. The city requests that required mitigation measures be addressed and included in the final report. The city is also concerned that an increase in sediment downstream will affect water quality and the water level in the lower portion of Malibu Creek and Malibu Lagoon. Over the past 10 years, the City of Malibu has spent over $150 million in water quality improvement projects to clean and preserve Malibu Creek, Malibu Lagoon, Surfrider Beach, and the ocean. Progress made by these projects could be negated by the inflow of sediment and potential flooding that could occur when the dam is removed. Another major issue that needs further study is the truck route that will be used to remove the sediment. Hauling 780,000 cubic yards of impounded sediment off-site translates to approximately 52,000 truck trips. It could take over 5 years of continuous truck trips, making 30 trips a day through the Malibu area. Malibu Canyon Road is one of our city's major access roads. The city is concerned that congestion on Malibu Canyon Road will create traffic on our other roadways and exacerbate the existing traffic problems. The report does not indicate the route that empty trucks will take to get to the project site, nor does it identify staging for the numerous trucks. This needs to be clarified before anything further is decided. The report also fails to identify the following stakeholders: FEMA, Caltrans, the County of Ventura, the County of Los Angeles, the City of Calabasas, the City of Malibu, the City of Ventura, and the Ventura Harbor District. These entities should be included in decisions made about this project. Again, the city requests that additional studies be conducted in order to address the concerns of our community. Thank you very much for allowing me to speak this morning.
Thank you. Candace Menigan.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Candace Menigan, and I am the Southern California Conservation Program Manager for California Trout. We are a nonprofit that was established in 1971, and we ensure resilient wild fish in healthy waters for a better California. And to that end, we have a regional office in Ventura, and I have been a part of the technical advisory committee meetings held by State Parks and the Army Corps for this project. We are supporting the consistency determination for Ridge Dam removal with the locally preferred alternative. Last year, Caltrout partnered with UC Davis and the Watershed Science Center to do the State of Soil Monitoring Report, which is a species-by-species account for all the salmon steelheaded trout in the state. And for Southern Steelhead, the level of concern is critical. And so within my lifetime, despite the species being listed as federally endangered 20 years ago, species is still on decline. And so in my lifetime, 25 to 50 years, it could be extinct. And so part of the major threats to steelhead recovery are major dams, estuary alteration, urbanization. And so we are calling for fish passage remediation, and we are supporting the locally preferred alternative. Caltrout has been a long-standing member and advocate for Ringe Dam removal. We did the 2002 Ringe Dam removal and review of regional ecological and economic benefits options for removal. We also did the 2006 Assessing Steelhead Restoration to the Santa Monica Mountains report, which both prioritized Ringe Dam removal. The National Marine Fisheries Service also identifies Ringe Dam removal and Malibu Dams as a recovery action in the National Marine Fisheries Service recovery plan for the species. We're trying to recover the species locally with the recent Thomas Fire in Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. Our coastal watersheds there have been devastated, which, if anything, brings more importance to the high-quality habitat above Ringe Dam. And this locally preferred alternative will open up 18 additional steelhead habitat river miles. It will also allow for ecological process, hydrology, and geomorphology processes downstream. And it will also address public safety. Right now, people are illegally jumping off that ring wall and spillway in association with the dam. So we are strongly urging the support of the consistency determination to accelerate Ringe Dam removal. And to that end...
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Graham Hamilton.
Good morning, Madam Chair. It's nice to see you, Honorable Commissioners. My name is Graham Hamilton, and I'm the chapter coordinator for the Surfrider Foundation's Los Angeles chapter. And I'd like to begin by just acknowledging some of the excellent points that I think have been brought up thus far about mitigation for homeowners. This is an important project, and as you all know, we've been in the process for a long, long time. You have all received a copy of a letter that Surfrider's Coastal Preservation Manager, Stephanie Sikich-Quinn, has submitted earlier. And I'm just here to reiterate our primary concern with sediment deposition in this project. Surfrider has participated in the Technical Advisory Committee for the Malibu Creek Ecosystem Restoration Project for well over a decade now, and we enthusiastically support the removal of Ringe Dam. We appreciate the time and energy that this commission and the Army Corps has devoted to understanding this issue while engaging local stakeholders and the community at large. We've come a long way, and we've still got a long way to go. Chronic erosion, as we all are well aware, is a serious problem along the California coast. Sloat, Imperial Beach, Broad Beach, Surfrider, Topanga, San Onofre, the list goes on and on. We are slowly losing our beaches up and down the coast. It's a process that is sure to accelerate as the effects of climate change and sea level rise become more and more pronounced. As such, it is important for us to be efficient and creative in the management of our environmental resources. And while we agree with the alternative analysis conducted by the Army Corps and the Department of Parks and Rec, it doesn't go far enough. The roughly 800,000 cubic yards of sediment currently impinged behind Ringe Dam is not merely material that needs to be disposed of. It is a critical resource that needs to be carefully studied, managed, and utilized. We are deeply concerned that only one-third of the impounded sediment is slated for reuse. The concept to landfill a majority of the impounded sediment behind Ringe Dam seems foolish. Landfilling this resource would be like taking most of your money out of your savings account only to light fire to the cash. We believe it is imperative that a more thorough and environmentally sensitive analysis of prospective on and offshore deposition sites be conducted so that we might afford ourselves the opportunity to nourish some of the more chronically eroded beaches in LA County. I can think of multiple beneficial reuses for the myriad sediment forms impounded behind Ringe Dam. Cobble and sand to shore up then protect the Adamson Estate and native Chumash burial grounds at Surfrider Beach, fines and silt to the agricultural community here in Oxnard, matching grains for Broad Beach. There's a list of opportunities here. Our beaches are starving, and we have with this project a great opportunity to feed them with sediment that would have been there in the first place if it were not for this obsolete and derelict dam. We look forward to continuing the conversation to remove Ringe Dam in order to reconnect the hydrological corridor of Malibu Creek, restore its impaired ecosystems, and work to establish more resilient coastlines in LA County.
Thank you. That's our last speaker card, so I would like to turn it back over to the Army Corps for rebuttal. And you will have 6 minutes, and in addition to that, if commissioners have additional questions, then they will be able to call you back up for further clarification.
Good morning, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Jim Hutchison. I'm the lead planner for the Corps of Engineers. If we could have our presentation pulled up, I'd appreciate it to reference a few of those slides. I do want to recognize and appreciate the comments that we received, too. These are aligned with many of the discussions that we've had for multiple years in regards to this study and the wide range of interests that have communicated their concerns and issues, and allowed us effectively to progress forward to where we are now. Speaking just very briefly and following up on some of the points that were made in the comments and the letters that we received too, the process that we have taken, the approach that we're moving forward with, the recommendation for this project is all associated with the challenges, issues, and concerns of what to do with a large volume of impounded sediment behind this aging former water supply structure that is Ringe Dam. One of the most important points here was to try and minimize those detrimental impacts and effects and go through an analysis at this stage of study that was sufficient and detailed enough to allow us to make informed decisions in the selection of this alternative, and then moving forward into a much more detailed design phase in preparation for construction of a project. In doing so, one of the most important factors that we had here was looking at the downstream environment too. And I know that there's been quite a few comments made on this one, and you can see in the slide that Mr. Simone was using too, where we've got that same picture in the lower right-hand corner. We recognize that there is pretty significant flood risk to downstream communities under existing conditions right now, that they could be flooded very frequently, that this, again, is a 5 to 10 year type of frequency event, so about, you know, less than 10% chance or more than 10% chance of occurrence in any given year. This results in that situation where you've got the impacts and effects at Cross Creek Bridge. You've got at least nuisance flooding to outlying structures in some of the adjacent properties. We fully recognize that by moving forward in implementation of a project where we're taking incremental year-by-year steps in removing the dam concrete arch and the associated impounded sediment, that we have to be cautious and careful in moving forward in ensuring that we are not inducing additional downstream flood risks. The approach that we by necessity have to take as part of our process is to move forward into this design phase and design stage where we're allowed the opportunity to prepare the more detailed analyses, utilize the models that we've already developed for this study, but then refine them to ensure that we are addressing whether or not measures are needed to be implemented to address any increase in flood risk, and if so, what those measures certainly are. In response to one of the other comments that was brought up, too, the trucking aspects, we are avoiding trucks going down into the City of Malibu location. So the trucks indeed do go up into along Las Verges Road, which is also Malibu Canyon Road, one and the same, up to Highway 101. It is a major thoroughfare. We recognize that it is a busy one, too. But from the processing standpoint, the trucks would be located on site. We are minimizing as we can the impacts from the traffic standpoint, but certainly over a long duration, it's a lot of truck trips, and we do recognize that. With limited time remaining, I just want to make sure that I'm also reaching out to Ms. Suzanne Good, who is representing our project partner here from California Departments of Park and Recreation.
Commission Chair and members of the Commission, I'm Suzanne Good, California State Parks. California State Parks is the largest landowner in the Santa Monica Mountains and also is the largest landowner in the three major watersheds that currently have habitat for the endangered southern steelhead trout. Our mission includes natural resource preservation and conservation, and this project is fully in compliance with that mission. This project has been a high priority that's been identified by numerous stakeholders beginning back in the early 1990s with the onset of the Malibu Creek Watershed Council. We went through an extensive facilitated process to identify key restoration opportunities in the Malibu Creek Watershed, and removal of Ringe Dam was identified as a very, very high priority. We have currently, I mentioned, three watersheds that currently have steelhead habitat, in all of which State Parks is the largest landowner. They are Topanga, Arroyo Sequit, and Malibu Creeks. We have recently completed a very successful steelhead passage project in Arroyo Sequit, and in 2008, we completed another successful steelhead passage restoration project in Topanga Creek. So we have a very good track record of having identified these high priority steelhead restoration sites, and we look forward to completing this one as well. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. And turning it back over to staff.
Yes, just a few points. A consistency determination is different from a coastal development permit, and in particular, a core feasibility study consistency determination is different from a more standard core project. You get a core maintenance dredging project, we get the environmental documents, we know exactly what's going to take place, and the commission reviews and concurs with the CED and the project is implemented. A feasibility study project is different. The core's internal processes require it to complete its NEPA document and requires it to come to the commission with its consistency determination. Once those processes are complete, then the core makes a pitch to Congress to get funding to do the types of technical design work that the staff wants, that you want, that the speakers want. But those types of studies, along with the mitigation measures and the monitoring measures that are going to be required as a part of this project, those studies cannot take place at this certain time. They come during the pre-construction engineering design phase. So while I appreciate the comments that, you know, we ought to have these design documents before us today, that's just not how the feasibility process works for the Corps of Engineers. You can rest assured that those studies will be produced if the Corps gets funding for the project. And as those studies are generated, they'll be submitted to the commission, and we're going to have a public hearing or two regarding those studies in the future. A comment was made about the traffic management plan. The Corps responded to that. I think the project, the Corps acknowledges, the staff acknowledges that the truck traffic from the Ringe Dam site up north to Highway 101, there will be a lot of trucks on the road for 6-7 years. One of the technical design projects that will be undertaken during the pre-construction engineering design phase will be a traffic management plan, including mitigation measures and minimization measures. And if you'd like, we can bring that plan back to you as well for your review. In fact, things may change on the ground over the next 8 to 10 years. We know what's on the ground up there now, but as we all know, fires happen, floods happen, and resource conditions may change in Malibu Canyon and in that area over the next 8 to 10 years. And as these future studies are undertaken, they would reflect changes that may occur. And you have a responsibility under the CZMA to make sure that a project of this nature that's not going to happen for another 8 to 10 years, in fact, remains consistent with the Chapter 3 policies. And so if there are significant changes in resource conditions in Malibu Canyon as a result of a future fire or a future flood event, you'll have the responsibility to make sure that this project or the project as it's modified over the next 8 to 10 years still remains consistent with the resource protection policies. And finally, in terms of reuse of sediments, the Corps has undertaken preliminary sediment testing at the impound and reservoir site, and their initial studies indicate that at least a third of the material is clean, sandy material that can have no question is it suitable for nearshore disposal. As excavation continues, additional sediment testing will take place, and if, in fact, the amount of material that can be placed in the near shore zone or on a beach is increased, the Chapter 3 policies of the Coastal Act require that suitable materials be placed on the shore or in the near shore. And I can assure you that the staff will make sure that, in fact, if we have much more material, we will insist that the Corps place that material back in the near shore zone. That's all my comments.
Thank you. And turning it back over to the Commission. Do we have a motion? Sure, you can go ahead and ask a question, Commissioner Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Simon. I think that answered actually a lot of some of my concern with the action that we're taking here today, and I think that I might be satisfied to go ahead and make a motion, but I guess I wanted to just get a couple things on the record to make sure that this was the appropriate thing to do and we were ready to move forward with this stage of an action at today's point in time. I recognize certainly a lot of the benefits, the environmental remediation, the opportunities for the steelhead trout and other environmental benefits that this project could bring. I certainly share the concern for the potential for unintended damage and other issues that may arise. And to the extent that that will be covered and that will be thought through in mitigation at some future point in time, I guess to be clear, by approving this through for purposes of a feasibility study, can you guarantee that the commission will have an opportunity in the future to be able to fully evaluate and decide to go or no go on the project itself?
The Corps is committed to submit to you the results of their additional hydraulic analysis and their geotechnical analysis. Those reports will come back to the staff. We'll look at those. We're going to prepare a response and interpretation for you and schedule a public hearing on those documents. At that time, the commission will be able to make a determination as to whether you believe that there are project changes that were not envisioned today or that there are new unanticipated effects on coastal resources. And at that hearing, you'll be able to make a finding that the Corps should submit a supplemental consistency determination for your action. At the same time, the Corps is already committed to submitting a supplemental consistency determination to the Commission should they find independently as well that the project has changed or if there are new coastal resource effects. For example, we've talked about the potential slope instability issues above the reservoirs, the Impana Reservoir site. Should it turn out that by removing those sediments, that it becomes clear that that's going to lead to significant slope instability below Malibu Canyon Road and power lines and utility lines, the Corps may have to modify the project to include various slope stability activities, structures, if you will. That's not envisioned today in this CD. That's a project change, and that will trigger the need for another consistency determination to come back to you for your review and analysis to make sure that those activities, those structures, or those measures are consistent with the Chapter 3 policies.
Right. Thank you. Yeah, and that's just one of, I think, of a few issues, and I appreciate the Corps bringing this for us today to be able to hear what they need to be studying a little bit closer as this project continues to move forward in the next phases.
I might add, that process will also continue for the flood hazard issues we've talked about today. That's clearly, the Corps is required under this project that they cannot increase the flood hazard downstream of the dam with this project. And so they believe right now, based on the studies that are done to date, that the project is not going to increase flood hazard below the dam. However, they're going to do additional hydraulic modeling, and if they determine that things change on the ground between now and then, or the more detailed modeling indicates, we may have a slight increase of hazard, they're required then to include in the project that isn't in the project now mitigation measures, protection measures to make sure that the hazards that exist today are not exacerbated by the project.
That's key, and I'm glad that is definitely going to occur, because I saw in the presentation that they had asserted that downstream flooding risks were no greater or lesser or something to that effect than we are currently experiencing today, that there has been flooding every 5 to 10 years, and that the flood hazard would be more or less the same going forward. I'm not sure that I would reach the same conclusion without really fully studying this a little bit further. So issues like that, I think, are going to be critical ultimately for this project to go forward, and I recognize that we have time and the funding is not even identified. I also don't want us to start down a road without fully appreciating some of the mitigation that might need to occur as a result of this project, and make sure that that's incorporated in the funding request as well. Even those that are proposing or in favor of moving forward on this today are bringing up issues about invasive species and then also the sediment issue. I was wondering, I appreciate that you said that at least 278,000 cubic yards is recognized as clean, and there could be more. That as the project were to proceed, if it can be determined that there is more appropriate sediment to be located in offshore, that could be done after at that time. But how can we guarantee, after the project is approved and designed and underway, how can we guarantee that that will be a case?
The Corps is going, as excavation proceeds over this 7-8 year project time period, the Corps is going to be continually analyzing the sediments as they are uncovered. They'll be doing a grain size analysis and chemical analysis to determine what they're looking at. And that those test results are going to be submitted to the commission staff. If we determine that right now they believe that the upper layer of the reservoir is not suitable, and they believe the lower layer is not suitable, if these results come in at a future date and we determine the staff that and we won't be the only agency looking at these test results, but if EPA and the commission staff determine that you've got more clean sediment, clean sands that are beach suitable or nearshore suitable in the reservoir cross section, we're going to tell the Corps, that material needs to go to the ocean, needs to go to the beach. If there's a disagreement between what we believe based on the test results and what the Corps believes, as the staff report says, we will bring that disagreement back to the commission for your review and approval. And if you believe that, in fact, if you agree with your staff that, there are additional volumes of material that ought not to go to the landfill but ought to go to the shore, you can make that determination, and you can reopen your consistency determination and determine that the project has changed. We've got much more ocean-suitable material than we thought we had back in 2018, and you can reopen your consistency determination and find that there's been a change in the project. And unless the Corps brings that material to the shoreline, to the ocean, that the project is no longer consistent with the Coastal Act. So you're going to have the ability to make sure that if, in fact, the amount of material that's suitable for ocean disposal exists, that make sure that material goes to the ocean.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Simon, and I appreciate that opportunity will be given to the commission going forward. Because on this point, I'm losing about 500,000 cubic yards to the Calabasas landfill, and I'm not familiar with their facility. That's a large amount. I'm not even sure the capacity or the opportunity lost there for the lifespan of that waste facility. All of this can be analyzed going forward, but that the opportunity could be afforded the commission to continually monitor and amend where sediment is going forward will be key. So I'd be happy, Madam Chair, to make the motion concur with consistency determination CD-0006-17, and look forward to this item as it develops in the years ahead.
Second.
That's a coin toss. Commissioner Leavenhill. All right. Commissioner Howell, to your second, would you like to?
I've had 8 years to talk about this.
Any other commissioners desiring to speak on this matter? Yes.
Thank you. And apologies to the audience for arriving late. LA traffic is always challenging. But I do want to just recognize that this is a monumental moment. I happen to have been involved with Ridge Dam probably going back 25 years when I worked for the Santa Monica Mountains Conservancy, and recognize a lot of faces here today. This is an extremely important project, and happy to be here to support it. I agree with the issues that were brought up regarding sediment. I think, obviously, sediment is a huge challenge for us statewide here. Our Santa Monica Mountains, our San Gabriel Mountains, heavily subject to erosion. And the opportunity to reuse some of that sediment, I agree. I hate to see it go to our landfills. You know, if we can explore some other creative ways to use that material effectively and not create additional mass for our landfills, I think that's a really optimal thing to go for. So just on the record, I'd like to reinforce that I think that, you know, obviously the Army Corps and I think others are very much in tune with that, but it is an important issue. We want to try to, you know, reuse as much as we can. So just appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any unwillingness for unanimous consent or concurrence on this item? Seeing none, we do approve the consistency determination.
Okay, and that takes us to item 12. Item 12 is the Deputy Director's Report for the South Central Coast District, which includes 3 immaterial permit extensions this month. In addition, in follow-up to the briefing that was provided to the Commission as part of my Deputy Director's Report at last month's meeting on the mudslide disaster response in the Montecito area of Santa Barbara County, the Deputy Director's Report this month also includes the Notice of Emergency Action by Santa Barbara County for the emergency work itself that was undertaken by the county during that emergency and that was located within the Commission's retained coastal development permit jurisdiction. And that work was completed pursuant to a provision of the Coastal Act, Section 30611, that allows for a waiver of certain types of emergency work. Now, that work was carried out by this county's flood control district in January during immediately after the very first rainstorm of the season. The community of Montecito was subject to flash flooding and disastrous mudslide and debris flows that left 21 people dead and 2 people still missing and resulted in the destruction or damage to over 400 structures. The disaster also resulted in the complete closure of Highway 101 for more than 2 weeks, as well as all other mountain access roads that would have led to Southern California, effectively cutting Santa Barbara off for a significant period of time. Now, that disaster was in large part precipitated by the Thomas Fire, which was more than 282,000 acres in size and lasted over a month, making it the largest wildfire in California history, which itself destroyed over 1,000 structures and damaged almost 300 others. Of course, the fire denuded large areas of the steep hillsides above the Montecito area, which became especially prone to erosion. Now, in addition to clearing the roadways, the majority of the emergency work involved clearing out the detention basins and creek channels that had filled or overfilled with mud and debris within the county's certified LCP jurisdiction.
And the county will be processing all necessary follow-up coastal development permits for the emergency work within their LCP area, with the exception of work by the Army Corps of Engineers, who are removing approximately 425,000 cubic yards of sediment from 21 different debris basins. And that material will be transported to an inland location. Now, a portion of the emergency work that did occur within the Commission's retained permit jurisdiction also included excavation of sediments from creek and detention basins, and that amount was approximately 70,000 cubic yards of material, which was taken to Goleta and Carpinteria beaches. That is the development that is the subject of the emergency notice that's before you today. The county was not able to carry out testing of that sediment that was deposited within the surf zone for the first 2 weeks of that disaster, and that was due to the immediacy of that situation and the need to immediately open the roads and prevent the potential for future and additional mudslides. However, during that period, the county did incorporate best management practices, including monitors to visually inspect all that material before it was deposited on the beach, to separate out debris, rocks, woody material, and that material was taken to inland landfills. Now, as that disaster response transitioned to a recovery and cleanup operation, the county did begin implementing sediment testing as soon as it was feasible, and that occurred on January 23rd, approximately 2 weeks after the initial disaster. The sediment was screened at the beach using a handheld volatile organic compound meter. No volatile organic compounds were detected in any of the materials. In addition, testing was done for toxic materials such as hydrocarbons, pesticides, and heavy metals, all of which confirmed that the levels for these sorts of contaminants were well below the thresholds required by federal and state authorities. I would just note that the county informed commission staff of the need for all this work to be done under Section 306.11 of the Coastal Act. In this case, the executive director concurs with the county's determination that that emergency work qualified for this waiver. Staff is not aware of any opposition to any of the items in the deputy director's report, and thus we're asking for the commission to concur with the executive director's determination on this matter today.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes on these matters? Seeing none, is there any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence with the deputy director's report? Seeing none, we do concur.
Thank you. That brings us to item 13. This is the regular calendar permit item. Staff is recommending be moved to the consent calendar for the South Central Coast District. The first item is item 15A, a notice of impending development by Ventura County Channel Islands Harbor to replace an existing 150 square foot concrete abutment and 128 square and install 256 linear feet of sheet pile wall along the water's edge within the harbor adjacent to their administration building. Also, item 16A, this is a coastal permit application by the City of Goleta to construct a new arched bottomless culvert over Old San Jose Creek to provide and extend Equal Street to Kellogg Avenue and provide necessary safety improvements. The addition of a Class 2 bicycle path along these roads, new pedestrian paths and sidewalks, drainage improvements, and implementation of a riparian habitat restoration program. And finally, item 17A, an amendment application by Ms. Getachew to delete a special condition requiring the provision of a view corridor across a property in western Malibu, for which the commission approved a coastal permit in 1976 for a new residence and to extinguish the related deed restriction. I would like to note that although the staff is recommending these items be moved to consent today, these items did involve complex issues, which was the case for both of the last two applications I mentioned. Now, in regard to the City of Goleta's application, I would just like to note that we worked for several years with the city to resolve issues that were related to that project. Over the course of that work, the city made significant modifications, including changing the project to delete one of the originally two proposed bridges in order to reduce the potential impacts of the project while still providing for the necessary infrastructure improvements, incorporating substantial habitat restoration and public access and recreational opportunities into the project as well. And I'd just like to take the opportunity to thank the city staff for working with our staff so diligently for so long to resolve those issues. And in regard to the second item, the Get It You application, I would note that although it is unusual for the commission to allow for the deletion of a previously required condition of approval, such as a public view corridor condition, in this case, staff believes this is appropriate due to the unique circumstances. And specifically, although this site was located between Pacific Coast Highway and the ocean and had a view corridor condition in 1976, over the intervening years, there were a number of surrounding lots. There were about 8 lots located between Pacific Coast Highway and the beach. Those other lots were all developed with other residential permits. And given the nature of the topography, the vegetation on site, and the other development that was approved without that view corridor condition, there simply are no views available over these sites today. And that is what is driving our recommendation, why we think this is appropriate. I would just note in closing, the applicants are in agreement with all conditions of approval. We're not aware of any opposition, and staff therefore recommends the commission vote and approve this item.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes?
Public comment.
Excuse me, sir, you're out of order.
Okay.
Are there any ex partes? We have one speaker card from John Davis with respect to these matters. Sir, you may come forward at this time.
Thank you very much. In regard to 17A, special condition number 3 is important in that it advances the principles enshrined in the California Coastal Act. Views are an important resource and have slowly but surely disappeared, replaced by walls and structures and other view obstructing objects. These views are protected not only by the California Coastal Act, but by the U.S. Coastal Zone Management Act of 1972, which the state act implements. To deny this permit is to protect the coast and its valuable resources, and to approve it would sacrifice the very resources this commission is tasked with protecting for only a private benefit. Furthermore, to extinguish such a deed restriction that is protective of views, for whatever reason, sets the stage for future requests to extinguish even more of the very few view corridors we have left of the valuable resources of the state. So think about it from the point of setting a precedent and having a line behind me come to you and say, well, you gave it to them. We want ours extinguished. We want ours extinguished until you have no view corridors left. Now, your staff was downplaying the value of view corridors, saying, well, everyone else is doing it. Therefore, let them do it too. It's really of no value. It is of value. That's why the commission that was here before you set forth this deed restriction. So take seriously the commissioners that have preceded you and their actions, and take seriously why they took those actions and why they stood up to protect the California Coastal Act and the Federal Coastal Zone Management Act, because the view corridor is a resource. There is no excuse to remove it now, and there was no excuse to remove it then, and there's no excuse to remove it 25 years from now. We have very few view opportunities left. They're being extinguished in a rapid manner, and in fact, in my area, in Los Angeles, in the Bayou Wetlands, they're proposing to put dikes along Highway 1 that are 30 feet tall, so you can't even see the ocean anymore. This is what we're talking about. So if you want to set a precedent that is contrary to your vows to uphold the Coastal Act, and you extinguish this, it will be running contrary to what your sworn oath to protect the laws of this state. And you all swore such an oath. Thank you very much for your consideration.
Thank you. Turning it back over to staff.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. For a rebuttal, or should we go ahead and have a motion?
I'd just like to make two very brief comments. One is just to note Mr. Davis's comment that staff has downplayed the importance of these easements. In fact, staff believes these easements in general are extremely important up and down the coast. But in this case, we have come to the conclusion that this is not a precedent It's an extremely unique situation that we've looked at very closely. We are, of course, available for, I'll conclude my comments, but note that we are prepared to provide a full presentation on this if the commission desires or to answer additional questions. But we do believe that in this unique case, there is no precedent or issues in this involved in deleting this special condition.
Thank you. Prior to calling for a motion, are there three or more commissioners desiring to take any of the matters off the consent calendar today? Seeing none, do I have a motion?
Move consent.
Second.
Would either of you like to speak to your motion? Is there any unwillingness for unanimous concurrence on the consent calendar? Seeing none, we do concur.
Thank you. That moves us to item 14A. This is a request for an extension of time to consider a Santa Barbara County LCP amendment that would add new regulations to their coastal zoning ordinance component of the county's LCP regarding the operation of short-term rentals. The Coastal Act provides for the commission to extend its time limit for action on these amendments for up to 1 year. In this case, an extension of time is necessary to allow for adequate review and coordination between commission and county staff. We are planning to tentatively schedule this amendment for a Southern California hearing by mid-2018. However, that schedule is dependent upon several workload factors. Thus, we're recommending that the commission extend the deadline for a full year as provided by the Coastal Act to allow for the uncertainty in the review process and our flexibility in coordinating with the county. The motion to extend the time limit is found at the bottom of the one-page staff report. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you. Are there any ex partes? Do I have a motion? Commissioner Howell.
Chair, I move that the commission extend the 60-day time limit to act on the County of Santa Barbara Local Coastal Program Amendment number LCP-4-STB-17-0086-3 for 1 year.
Second.
Would you like to speak to your motion? Would you like to speak to your second? Is there any unwillingness for a unanimous concurrence? Seeing none, we do approve the time extension on that permit.
Madam Chair, that brings us back to public comment.
I think we're fine. We're fine. Thank you. Again, many thanks to the public for continuing to be present. We do have a very short meeting today, and so we were able to get back to public comment in relatively short order. We will be hearing first from Mr. Robert Tongan, followed by Connie Korenstein, followed by Joy Corradetti. You'll each have 3 minutes.
Good morning. August 2016, paddlers of canoes, kayaks, and SUPs were banned from the safest, closest launch area in the ocean and the islands from the Channel Islands Harbor. I belong to a California kayak club, which extends from San Simeon to San Diego, and that club has utilized that beach for launches to the islands many times. We had a number of separate but cordial meetings with Supervisor Zaragoza and Director Krieger and to work this problem out. In August of 2017, we got an email from Supervisor Zaragoza. On August 15th, county representatives met with the California Coastal Commission regarding the issue of launching from Kitty Beach. The Coastal Commission was supportive of the requested changes. The commission did affirm that a desired change would be in conflict to the county's Public Works Act and therefore amendment would be necessary. However, they did not convey any concerns with regard to an amendment. John Zaragoza. So we requested what was the plan and the time frame, and Director Krieger was very kind and very quickly outlined a 400 plus day minimum plan to do that. The work would start after our next major Coastal Commission hearing scheduled for mid-September 2017. So The first step was to prepare the argument. The second step was draft the PWP. We haven't seen any progress on that. We've requested emails, written letters, and phone calls and have not ever gotten a response. I did have a chance to corner Director Krieger this morning, and she says there is making progress. And so we're looking forward to hearing what that progress and where they are on the plan. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Connie Korenstein.
Hello. I live in the Silver Strand Beach area of Oxnard, across the street from Kitty Beach, in the Channel Islands Harbor. And I really appreciate this opportunity to speak to you on an issue that is not on your agenda, but is important to public access, not just for the kayak club, but for the public in general. Prior to September 2016, on any given day throughout the year, you would have seen paddlers, canoers, and kayakers launching from this public sandy beach, enjoying the free parking and restrooms. But after many years of shared usage, the Harbor Department posted an ordinance citing no vessels allowed within 100 feet of swimmers. Harbor Patrol began to chase kayakers and paddlers away under threat of citation, in spite of the fact that there are typically no swimmers on the beach. We were told to launch at Hobie Beach on the other side of the seawall. This is not a beach. It's a steep, rocky, downward slope, which is extremely dangerous to navigate on foot, even, and unsafe for kayaks and paddleboards knocking into the rocks. The Harbor Department claims that the public boat dock and the easy kayak launch are available. These areas are not accessible to people who walk their kayaks, nor to those who drive, because parking is limited to 2 hours and is quite a long walk, as are the restrooms. In addition, the launch conditions are unsafe and impossible for anyone who does not possess extreme strength and agility, like me. By the way, none of these options are wheelchair accessible, as Kitty Beach is. As you've heard, we were told by Ventura County Supervisor John Zaragoza that Coastal Commission staff agree that the simple solution is to install a rope that would create a lane of access for kayak and peddlers. This would provide safe access and shared usage to all public beach users at this underutilized resource of the Channel Islands Harbor. The county must submit an amendment to the Channel Islands Harbor PWP for this action, but as you've heard, this has not been done in the 18 months since the original request. Thus, a wonderful public resource is being denied, as well as access to the harbor, the ocean, and the islands. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Joy Corradetti.
That's right. Thank you. My name is Joy Corradetti, and I live in Redondo Beach. I drove up this morning just because I wanted to speak to you. As you know, I know you are evaluating the redevelopment and the waterfront redevelopment of Redondo Beach. I want to say, as a member or as a resident of Redondo Beach for 30 years, I'm passionate about my beautiful city called my home. It's truly my favorite place on earth. And I love the glorious waterfront. I've always lived within one or two blocks of the waterfront. And I, too, am a member of Cal State Dominguez Hills with my bachelor's degree and master's degree. And in 2009, there was a great layoff in aerospace, which I worked. So I decided to open up a gift shop on the Redondo Pier. So I've been there now for 7 years. I love my store. People come in my shop on the Redondo Beach boardwalk and say that it's their favorite shop on the boardwalk and the pier. I have a big sign saying I support the waterfront, and I do, and I have people saying, you mean you want that mall? And I say to them, what part of 10% retail is a mall? It's not a mall. And I think that the opposition has grossly misled people to say it's a mall and it's going to be overcrowded and we're going to have a lot of traffic. excuse me, and because of that, people have voted it down. But I want to say I love the city. It's absolutely beautiful, and it needs help right now. It's dilapidated, it's falling apart, and we can't kick this can down the road any longer. We really do need redevelopment of Redondo Beach. I totally support the CenterCal project. I don't feel that it's overbuilt, and I think that the people of Redondo Beach and the future generations truly deserve this. I just want to say fear antics don't work. And there are people that have set out so much fear of traffic, and they say, we don't want traffic. And because of that, we have to live in a dilapidated waterfront. The waterfront is for everybody. And like I say, this is my home. I love it. My business is there for 7 years. I'm a resident of Redondo Beach for 30. And please, I know that you'll be making a ruling on it. And I just have to say from my heart that I think that we really do need help, and we really can't kick this can further down the road. Thank you so very much.
Thank you. Next, we will have a presentation by Patricia McPherson. And there are multiple speaker cards.
Multiple speaker cards, you mean, Leslie?
How much time do you think that you'll need? You have three speakers seating time to you.
Well, there's my time and the two speakers for me, and as well as...
That 12. If you can do it shorter than that, that'd be great,
right.
But...
Right.
That's
I just have a video that I want to start with. So you needn't call all of them up as long as you have the names. That's terrific. And we can start with the video.
Great. Thank you.
Okay. At 234. This is a from NBC's Burning Questions. It's a Peabody Award investigative series regarding the Biona Wetlands area and Playa Vista, the oil field gas issues, as well as conflict of interest.
Enbridge says a much larger quantity of gas is seeping into an old riverbed deep under Playa Vista and leaking upwards.
The gas spreads out into a large geographic area.
When the developers first began planning for all of this, Playa Vista, back in the early 1990s, the city commissioned an impact study, which acknowledged the presence of flammable methane and toxic BTEX chemicals. But within certain guidelines, it proclaimed the site safe for development.
The 1993 EIR stated there were no shallow zones or pockets of gas that could seep to the surface under the Playa Vista site. None. No gas.
Well, game over.
Game over.
But McPherson and Endress began noticing signs of widespread gas migration. Bubbles in Centinella Creek, which they say tested positive for gas. Bubbles in boat slips in Marina Del Rey, which flared when ignited. They also discovered early studies commissioned by the developers indicating dangerous levels of hydrogen sulfide at the site and widespread gas contamination.
Which was proof positive that they had found oil field gas surfacing all across the Playa Vista site.
Early engineering studies by the city described Playa Vista as, quote, a high-risk area and confirmed hydrogen sulfide and BTEX gases at the site and methane concentrations.
Levels of methane gas that could be explosive.
One state agency became concerned.
Some of the BTEX chemicals are cancer-causing chemicals, known human carcinogens.
Another state agency is accused of looking the other way, at least in the beginning.
It was made clear to me when I joined the PUC that the development was going to happen and that no state agency should stand in the way. It was very clear that the biggest Democratic donors in town were behind that development deal. From my perspective, there was a whole atmosphere of, we don't want to see anything.
In the year 2000, Playa Vista developers spent more money lobbying the city than almost any other company. They also passed out publicity flyers saying there was, quote, little methane at the site. The next year, a city reviewer gave the project a green light.
The city really was not looking at the key health issues that were involved here.
The city said the SoCalGas underground storage facility, quote, is not the source of methane contamination found at the site, a point repeatedly emphasized by Playa Vista and SoCalGas. The report also shrank the methane concentrations and declared the risk from hydrogen sulfide and BTEX to be, quote, insignificant, with no further investigation warranted. Not everybody was convinced.
There was information that we were not provided.
The state's Department of Toxic Substances Control called the city report, quote, incomplete, and faulted participating engineers for running gas tests in clean soil that had been brought in to cover the contamination.
That would obviously not result in an accurate reading.
Walter Merschat, an engineer who took part in the testing, confirms in writing that it was often done in newly laid cover soil known as surcharge, which he says conceals gases and results in inaccurate, lower or non-detectable readings of methane, hydrogen sulfide, and BTEX.
I don't think we were getting correct answers.
As construction continued, the city instructed developers and homeowners to install safety systems to keep the gas in check. But now, with the project half complete, Endres and McPherson have uncovered what they see as evidence that some safety measures are not working.
They've had problems with them, yes.
In fact, a city expert has warned the city council that a series of experimental 50-foot vent wells designed to siphon off gas in the most dangerous high methane areas may not be effective.
A deep vent well will not work properly where you have high water table or you have clay soils or clay sands, which could clog up the deep vent well.
Fire department documents dating from the past year show few gas alarms going off inside the buildings.
But Billy,
various
excuse me,
breakdowns
you can
in gas monitoring
stop that
systems,
now, thank
especially
you.
At the Fountain Park apartments.
And load the PowerPoint that I've created, please. I draw your attention to this because the discussion up there about the studies being done in clean soil, a lot of the problems that were done with the studies were done by Camp Dresser McKee. Camp Dresser McKee was before you in December on behalf of the Fish and Game Department and Playa Capital, who spoke with regard to the drains that the CDP was issued for with the illegal drains that are on the Biona wetlands. These are issues you saw the former head of the California Public Utilities Commission, Loretta Lynch, discussing the fact that agencies were told to look the other way on behalf of the Playa Vista site. These are issues of conflict of interest that are very real. I wanted you to hear this from other people that are agency people. The people that have done the DEIRS for the Biona area are all consultants of either SoCalGas and or Playa Capital. And as you saw in December, the people that came before you were SOMAS that had inserted those illegal drains in the first place, and Camp Dresser and McKee, who basically stated that, again, I was wrong, there's no gas out there. But what they didn't provide you and what Fish and Game didn't take, which this staff actually had, that I had provided them, were studies, even CDM's own studies, where they found hydrogen sulfide in higher levels of gas, which they claimed they didn't have in December. But moving on from there, I do want to thank all of you for the vote asking for the 30-day capping and to disallow any 5-year wait in removal of those drains. I thank you very much for not catering to a sister agency and acting as an agency that will do its enforcement job. To that end, that CDP came out as a 30-day capping. I cannot, with 3 to 4 months, get a response from Fish and Game through a Public Record Act request as to what is going on there. Because they've stated ahead of time that I will not receive this information until then. So at this point in time, and I've asked staff from the Coastal Commission what has gone on there, and I've also not received any response. The drains appear to have been capped with some sort of material that you would caulking that like you would use in your bathroom, which very likely works, but I would like to have all of the information with regard to what was done, all of the information with regard to the removal of those drains, because Director Ainsworth in the CDP stated that they could be then allowed another beyond 5 years or beyond to remove the drains. So we don't have the actual findings from that hearing, which is of great concern to Grassroots Coalition. Similarly, with CDP 5-91-463, which backs us up to the settlement agreement with the Coastal Commission and the Friends of Biona, this is a CDP that needs to be updated.
There was a contingency CDP similar to this situation that showed that once it's capped for here, then you have to do that. Well, in CDP 463, first they had to do the catch basin, and then they had to finish off the flood control. Well, the flood control was never finished off, and it was dropped when the state bought the property. But there's been no updating from staff to fill in the gaps as to what happened. And there has been no filling in of the gaps as to what has happened since the settlement agreement with the Friends of Biona that occurred in 1990, which was years before the city ever even gave any coastal development permit for projects out there, including the catch basin, which is Playa Vista's flood control, which, if you look at the picture that's in front of you, that's Playa Vista's first vision of Biona. That's what was in the settlement agreement. And as you can see, what is green there includes the catch basin area, and it includes the area to the left of that, which was to be dug out. And if you look to the north, which is Area A, it is also an area that was dug out. Very similar to what they're trying to do in the DEIR now, dig it out. These are the issues why we want to go back to the settlement agreement and have this all straightened out. And by the way, just so I can make clear, Grassroots Coalition, and I'm also executive member of the Airport Marina Group, Sierra Club, there was a recent tour given. I just want to make it clear, while I appreciate people coming and talking, Grassroots was not invited to that, and neither was the Airport Marina Group or the Sierra Club. So to be clear, so that I hopefully we'll not see in the future that all of the groups that would like to see Biona dug out were discussed and talked to. That is definitely not the case. Next slide. This is, again, from Exploration Technologies. In that folder that I provided you, you have all of these slides, and you have the full letter. That portion that I've highlighted discusses the pump and treat that's needed to even make sure that these systems work. That pump and treat is what I talked to you about in December. Playa Vista has to get rid of its groundwater. One of the open investigations with staff that I have is the removal of water from Playa Vista. Not only were they removing the drains, but they are taking away, pumping and diverting all of the groundwaters. Next slide, please, of the Biona wetlands. I need to get to the... It is the slide that you have in your book of the aquifers. Next slide, please. Not that one. That one. All right. Here are the aquifers. These are the freshwater aquifers underneath Biona. As you can see to the left there is the salt water. None of these waters have been, and I'm listening to the Army Corps saying today that they are going to pay attention to things, but in Biona's situation in the DEIRS, which they are a part, they were taken off the job, so to speak, and we have no hydrology studies. There has been no investigation as to how to protect those fresh waters that are underneath Biona. Next slide also is another one. Those are all the freshwater aquifers. Those waters are classified as freshwater drinking water. And none of that has been attended to in the DEIR-EIS. I do appreciate staff's preliminary comments where they have stated that the oil field gas issues have not been addressed independently, and in fact, they have not. SoCalGas is the only one that has made comment regarding their own gases at this site, and that needs to change. And that is also of concern because here with Ringe Dam, you have the Corps saying that all this evaluation will happen. Well, it hasn't. We have a DEIR EIS out, and those evaluations haven't happened for Biona, and they need to happen. And we would like all of your assistance in making that happen, and I will send you the information that's also in your packet.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have John Davis. It looks like you have seated time, so you'll have a total of 6 minutes.
I'm waiting for the PowerPoint to be pulled up.
Good
This commission is no different in looking the other way on Coastal Development Permit 5-91463. In fact, the staff issued a Coastal Development Permit without a vote of the California Coastal Commission, and falsified roll call was provided. The Coastal Commission staff is actively concealing this important information from the Coastal Commission regarding 591463. The date of hearing was scheduled for May 12, 1992. Please remember this date. Records responsive to a CPRA prove that the Coastal Commission staff issued a coastal development permit without a vote by this commission and without a public hearing. There are no transcripts available, but the hearing audio tape was provided. It proves the commission did not vote to approve the permit on the 12th, and the tape says the hearing was trailed to the next day, the 13th, and it was not. The audio tapes prove that. The application was received on March 23, 1992. Prior to the hearing, on May 12th, a roll call was submitted by an unknown party to the staff, date stamped April 8th, more than a full month before the hearing. It says, as modified by staff. This is the record of vote that the staff presented to me in the CPRA. The hearing was scheduled for May 12th. The coastal development permit was issued on August 7th, 1992, and says the vote was on April 8th, 1992. It also says the findings were adopted on September 16th, 1992. There was no hearing on April 8th. The adopted findings issued on September 16, 1992 say the hearing was on May 12th. Contradicting the permit, which says the vote was on April 8th. The audio tape of the May 12th hearing indicates the information required for the commission to vote is missing. Executive Director Peter Douglas encouraged the commission to vote anyway and to sort it out later. Staff counsel Ralph Faust objected. Peter Douglas said, I'll get the names, probably referring to the names you just saw in the falsified roll call, and we will trail this till tomorrow. There was no hearing on the next day, May 13th, according to the May 13th audio record, and there was no hearing. The permit was issued by staff without a hearing, without a vote by the Coastal Commission, and using a falsified roll call submitted by an unknown party, date stamped in a month before the hearing occurred. Therefore, this permit is void. And here is the audio tape of that hearing, and you can hear for yourself that this is not a fallacy. It's the truth. This commission staff issued a permit contrary to the due process of law, which requires this commission to take a vote and do this. Now, remember, the following hearing, we have the audio tapes of that from PRA. It was not trailed to the next day. No vote was taken. Therefore, this permit is void. Here's the audio tape. Could you turn it up, please? Okay, got a little volume issue here, but this works too.
Yes, an item 13.
Wise findings are adopted.
13B. Yes, an item 13B is the revised findings for the McGuire-Thomas amendment, and these set of refinements reflect the commission's action to approve the amendment. There is a handout from the applicant's representative in which they suggest four relatively minor corrections to the revised findings. We've reviewed that handout, and we agree that those corrections should be made to reflect your action and incorporate those into our staff recommendation. That concludes my comments.
Do you have the prevailing side on that, Chuck? I didn't bring any records on it.
Wasn't here at the hearing either.
Teresa probably brought one. We're going to have to probably continue this, Mr. Chairman, because they don't have the prevailing side.
Tell you what, why don't you all vote for it, and then we'll sort it out later.
We'll sort it out. I'm going to tell Mr. Faust. Mr. Faust is having a stroke.
Well,
right. We'll have to call San Francisco.
I'll get the names and we'll trail this till tomorrow.
We anticipate interrogatories if we do this.
Yes. No. And then maybe depositions. So we'll trail this and get the names for you for tomorrow.
Okay. I think that takes us to 15.
That's the end of the tape, and you can stop the audio.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, item 15.
So we have the hearing audio tapes from the following day, the 13th. No vote was taken. The Coastal Commission issued a permit. The staff issued a permit anyway and usurped this commission's authority and overstepped and defrauded the entire state and the United States in this respect. This is deplorable, and this will be addressed again in the context of the Coastal Development Permit 591463. It may end up in litigation again, and you will hear about it, and you need to do something to fix this, because this is the permit they're trying to finish with the Biona Wetlands Restoration to complete the flood control project predicated on this permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll have Jody Usek. And followed by Leah Memzik. And then followed by, appears to be Elizabeth Clay.
Hi, it looks like we lost a few commissioners, maybe? I don't know. Anyhow, thank you very much, commissioners. I appreciate your time and attention. My name is Jody Gusick, and I'm a little bit nervous, but I'm here to tell you my story of moving to Venice to build a beautiful home and create a family and a life for myself there. So let me see, take a deep breath. I moved to Venice in 1998. I'm a market research professional. I love art and architecture. It's my side passion. In 2001, I fell in love with a man who also lived in Venice with the same dream of designing and building a home and raising a family. In early 2004, this story goes way back, but it continues for many others. In early 2004, we purchased a lot in the Walk Streets that had a very small tear down a house on it. The floors were so termite infested, you could see the dirt beneath them. We got busy, very excited, designing our home with an architect. We were happy and excited to finally be realizing our dream. We were engaged at that time, and we submitted our plans to the city. They approved them without any issue. They praised us, in fact, for our thoughtful design, as it was fully Venice-specific plan compliant. And it complied with all the building codes at that time. However, to our astonishment and shock, we were notified that the city's approval of our plans had been appealed by someone in the neighborhood. The appeal was filed only one day before the appeal period was to end. I remember our shock and panic. We were to be married in just a couple of weeks. Now we had to cancel our wedding, figure out what to do to defend our house. We found out that a woman we had been living next door to, who we had been friendly with on our current street, had been quietly organizing against us. She and three other households on what was to be our new street were doing all they could to stop us. We were stunned, blindsided. I started having panic attacks and nightmares as this small group were doing everything they could to pressure us and to stop us from continuing. They lied to others about us. They told other people that we were developers from Palm Springs. We had both lived in Venice for nearly 10 years. They held up our permits for nearly a year and a half. This cost us not only over $150,000 in carrying costs and legal fees, it cost us our wedding, it cost us our honeymoon. Our first year and a half of marriage was consumed by public hearings like this. I've been before the Coastal Commission before, as well as court appearances. I had to file a temporary restraining order because we were being harassed. It cost us our peace of mind, our comfort in our neighborhood where we'd lived for years. And it came at huge, not only huge financial costs, but emotional and health costs as well. I developed TMJ. My husband developed a heart condition. He ended up having a heart attack at age 52. He's still alive, thank goodness, but we are no longer married. Although we ultimately won our right to build our home, the legal fees and carrying costs during that delay put us so much into debt that even though we had succeeded in building our dream home, we had to sell it because we had to dig out of our debts. So although I was scared to come here today, I come here to tell you this story because it's just one of many, many stories like mine that I've seen go on over these past 20 years that I've lived in Venice. The toxic bullying and intimidation that occurs to homeowners like myself has to stop. I've seen many, many other people harassed and intimidated for fences, for trying to remodel, for modest remodels, for new construction, everything in between. In fact, they bullied my husband not just once, but twice. Years after we sold that first house, we gathered our resources and tried again. And this time we lost.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Leah Memzik. While you get set up, maybe we'll call up. Are you ready, or should we call up another person?
I'm ready. Thank you. I have a little presentation for you, and then I'll speak afterwards.
Thank you.
Oh, I have 6 minutes. George Abrahams is with me.
You have 6 minutes.
Thank you very much. It's
my 6 minutes. Thank you so much. In a state that's really working, we are a state of laws, and we want to observe the law.
Everyone's entitled to accurate information.
However, California has not been working, as it does not obey the laws, and it does not provide accurate information, and it allows select insiders to evade compliance with the laws and to provide misleading, false, and fraudulent information.
City Council members, my name is Leah Renee Memzik, and I'd like to bring to your attention once again a complaint regarding public officials' corrupt alteration of written laws.
The City of Los Angeles corruptly removed the quality from its written laws. No pun intended. They really did. They got rid of the word quality, like from the California Environmental Quality Act. And of all places, they got rid of it in the coastal zone of the City of Los Angeles.
LAMC 12.20.2G1F was written, published, and states, any other finding or finding as may be required for the development by the California Environmental Quality Act. However, public officials have corruptly altered it. I brought it to your attention on October 20th and many other times. I'm delivering you the document again, once again today. It's not an error because you know and failed to correct. And there's harm and there's a benefit to the city. Because see, if the city doesn't tell anybody, the city doesn't have to submit their own city environmental records. So that's fraud, once again. Please correct. I instruct you per the California Constitution to correct.
Thank you, Ms. Renee. Julius, public comment.
Harms to the Pacific Palisades coastal bluffs include broken sanitary sewers.
Right there. So that's just going right into the earth.
Broken storm drains.
The sewers and storm drains are leaking.
And a moving coastal bluff that the city refuses to notify the people.
They are apparently installing a motion sensing device to detect earth movement. About 25 years ago, the hillside moved.
More harms include unpermitted development and construction of new structures on a coastal bluff in the Bel Air Bay area of the City of Los Angeles. See violation V512039. On March 7, 2018, and on previous occasions, I delivered the coastal bluff map and the location of 283 Trina Way to each of the coastal commissioners. I also pointed out in the March 7th hearing how McPherson of 283 Trina Way uses false and fraudulent and inaccurate information.
For example, McPherson uses assessor number 003 for his street widening, but for his new development, he uses 011. So he has two assessor numbers. Major fraud, and you're allowing it.
So I brought you today the deleted assessor number ending in 003. It was deleted on April 3rd, 2015. And then he got a new one. This is Scott McPherson, director of McPherson Oil. He got a new assessor number activated on April 3rd, 2015. Why is that harmful? Because last month he put in his whole housing plan. That how did he submit and have it recorded? You know, that's big felony. A big felony. Who approved it? Who approved it? I'm still waiting for the coastal development permit hearing because I appealed it and it's scheduled for April 21st. So I ask you guys if you can make sure you write a letter and say he has to have a coastal development permit. Here's a letter on 6 months after the fact. He's still using the false and fraudulent assessor number. What are they covering up? What are they covering up? This is a storm drain. Do you see the white? Do you see the white? There's the white. 40 feet of it wasn't there. That's the storm drain right in front, downslope from my property, and right in front of McPherson. And by the way, that white is holes. I put my hand through it. See a little hand? That's the pipe. 40 feet of it was non-existent. So I guess that's why the hill's going down. Let's see what else isn't legal. It's not legal to build on a bluff. You can see on your categorical exclusion, which, by the way, when I went to get the map yesterday, your staff denied it. They denied my ability to see 283 Trina Way records. And if you can see on the middle of page 5, it says not included, not part of this exclusion are the first row of bluff and canyon lots. Doesn't matter that. One more thing, his certificate of trust is an oil company. It's an oil lease. And your categorical exclusion says no oil drilling. I did bring it up to Jack. He said, well, they'll never drill for oil. But if they cause that landslide with that pipe, and you know it, here's the map. And by the way, here's his application. There's no permit number. And one more thing, just let me show you this. Here's the, and I'll keep it all for you. You know, 5 years, nobody's come up to me and asked me to see my evidence. Not one person. By the way, I went to the FBI to file a complaint about it. They didn't want to even see the evidence. Do you want to know what the FBI, I don't want to talk about it, but the FBI told me, I just have to tell you real quick. They told me murder's not a crime. So I've been living with the terror of an FBI special agent saying murder's not a crime. Let me tell you, I walked out of there, talked to one of the attorneys. I said, murder's not a crime? He goes, oh yes, it's a crime.
Thank you, Ms. Renee. Thank you.
Here's your map. If you could come up to me afterwards, and I'll present all the evidence to you so you know. And if you could please write a letter directing them in the appeal hearing, which is scheduled for March 21st. I did appeal it.
Thank
you. Could
you
please write a letter that he has to uphold, needs a coastal development permit, if it's even legally possible to obtain.
Thank
you very much.
Elizabeth Clay, followed by Barry Cassily, and the last speaker card I have is Dario Dodman Alvarez.
Needed a minute by Dario, so that's 4 minutes.
All
hard
right,
to follow that.
4 minutes.
Hi, my name's Elizabeth Clay. I'm going to talk to you about my role as a Venice resident and some perceptions that I have. The congestion in the West Side is in large part driven by the fact that thousands of workers arrive and leave city neighborhood centers every day. Venice is no exception to this problem. People and talent are attracted to economic opportunities, and Venice has plenty of business opportunity, especially as we scale to accommodate the well-known growth of IT tech facilities. One misnomer is that individuals who work for these companies are all being paid salaries that are conducive to the cost of living. This is often not the case, and even hardworking urban professionals can feel poor in the face of Venice's exorbitant cost of housing. A prior owner of a mortgage facility, I'm well aware that the median income of most households is insufficient to cover a normal-sized mortgage payment when a single-family home starts at a value of $1.5 million and goes up. That said, a dual-income household with a legal accessory dwelling unit stands a much greater chance of qualification. Legal rental units provide a legitimate source of qualifying income on a standard loan application, thus opening the range of potential buyers. The twofold effect, of course, is that a renter has also been accommodated in a city that could be proximal to their job. All levels of government are being forced to explore density as the logical answer to managed growth. Progressive municipalities offer density bonuses and less onerous parking and setback requirements in an effort to reward developers for affordable housing units. Centralizing communities and creating an urbanized environment is a more cost-effective approach and reduces the waste that comes with sprawl. Now, how does that ideal of increased density fit into the footprint of Venice? Well, here's the good news. Venice is uniquely urbanized already. Small lots have been creatively designed to house varied architectural styles, both modern and traditional in feel. We live in close range of each other, and there's an understanding that we will be proximal to our neighbor, but we are also part of an inclusive neighborhood. The various catchments in Venice and the nicknames they've been given just further illustrate the pride we have for our neighborhoods. Taking a crash course in modern urban planning has now become your task, commissioners. Even as a layperson on the topic, I can assure you that nowhere in the tutorial on sensible community growth will you find a chapter on preserving post-war, cheap and cheerful builds as the best means to accommodate a growing populace. This kitsch ideal is only for those who would like time to stand still so memories can be preserved in a vacuum. Keep in mind that this ideal couldn't be maintained even if we wanted to. The toothpaste is out of the tube, and beachside bungalows have become a version of entry-level luxury living in Venice. These aren't homes for those in need of affordable rental housing, and this is the new paradigm, whether we like it or not. With the exception of some iconic craftsman builds and some notable designs from celebrated architects, the vast majority of Venice bungalows were cost-effective developments built to house vacationing seasiders and the working class. A small faction of activists would have you believe that greater than one-story builds will cause Venice to be shrouded in darkness, and we will all be gasping for air that will apparently stop circulating. What they fail to mention is that we currently have height restrictions and setback guidelines for each unique catchment of Venice that ensure we do not become a towering community. My own 900-square-foot home is a patchwork quilt of renovation DIYs that have taken place since 1948. Unless I am to add square footage and render it a useful family home, the value remains strictly in the land. This lot's highest and best use would be a four-bedroom home with an accessory dwelling unit. This would require leaving the current square footage allowances alone. If we are to encourage the growth of a family-oriented community, inclusive of homeowners and renters, we must not consider downsizing square footage. Thank you.
Thank you. Barry Cassily. Followed by Dario Rodman Alvarez. And I heard one of the speakers ceded time.
Dario ceded one of his minutes.
Okay. You'll have 3 minutes.
Actually, Dario's not here. He had to leave for work. So he has it written. Can I read it or not later?
No, you can submit it for the record, okay. But if you want to go ahead and use your 3 minutes now, that's fine.
Okay, thank you. And thank you guys for sticking around for public comment. With all due respect to the commission and its good work, the conversation about Venice that has been evolving in front of the commission, a conversation that has grown by degrees ever more divorced from the realities of the social fabric and built environment of our community, has reached its absurd apex in the current discussion centered around small single-story homes in Venice. Venice has always been a diverse and eclectic community defined by its diversity of housing stock that has made the diversity of our population possible. One-third of the houses in Venice are modernist contemporary homes. Contemporary architecture in Venice really exploded about 40 years ago. That's been the most important period of building in Venice's history, and that's what Venice is famous for. Another third of our housing is multi-unit housing, apartment buildings, and not small ones, often 6 to 8 units on 5,000 square foot lots. The remainder of our housing is pre-1950. Many of those structures are larger than two and sometimes three stories. Some are single-story small structures. A radically revisionist, fabricated vision of our intense, vital urban community, a vision wherein blinders are put on to filter out 99% of our community and replace it with the fantasy of Venice as a quaint, small Carmel-by-the-sea beach town where people live in little cottages and, I don't know what, have tea with each other, a vision that is patently and utterly absurd. In larger context, it is important to remember that the same forces forwarding this fabricated, cartoonish reimagination of Venice are some of the same faces that behind the 1980s downzoning of Venice. That downzoning, while not altogether unintentional or malicious, was undeniably motivated by the desire to eliminate the possibility of building any more HUD low-income housing in the neighborhood. That move to downzone was exactly as classist, racist, and exclusionary as it sounds. That downzoning also eliminated the possibility for building any more affordable market-rate apartment units which were common in our area up to that point. Now, incredibly, these same people are going after single-family homes. Whereas the Venice Pacific Plan is predicated on the fundamental principle that at a minimum, family homes should be allowed in single-family neighborhoods, homes which in an urban area such as Venice, where the average lot size is 2,700 square feet, two stories with nominal setbacks, is the minimum necessary for a functional single-family home. These people are lobbying for twisted regulatory interpretations that would void the fundamental components of the Venice Pacific Plan and make single-family homes impossible on many of the single-family lots in our single-family neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you. And you could submit that the additional comments to Ms. Miller for the record. And that was our last public speaker, but had a question for staff during public comment. Some extremely serious allegations were alleged with respect to an item and a vote in 1992 in the Biona area involving an alleged falsified roll call vote. Do you have some additional information to provide us? It's very serious allegations, and I think we have to address whatever that is.
No, I don't have any knowledge of what went on there, and I would encourage Mr. Davis to submit any evidence he has, and we can look into it, certainly. From what I heard, though, it sounded like a revised findings hearing that was postponed and that the permit was approved, but the revised findings needed to be acted on. So I just want to remind the commission that we don't have to have revised findings to issue a CDP. So, but we can certainly look into those allegations.
Thank you for that clarification. That certainly helps. And if the public speaker could submit something in writing, I'm sure that our staff, as they have indicated, will look into that. Are there any other comments from commissioners? Commissioner Howell?
Just quickly, there was some comments regarding Kitty Beach. We can talk off mic, but I am interested in whether or not we are the problem in terms of getting the kayakers and the stand-up paddleboarders into the water.
Sure, I can respond to that. No, we are not. We're not a problem. We have met with the harbor director on this, and we have indicated that it does appear to us as staff that Kitty Beach could accommodate both kayakers and swimmers. As one of the speakers correctly noted, there is an issue. The public works plan, the certified public works plan, designates that beach for swimmers only. It would require a PWP amendment. And the harbor has indicated that they are evaluating a potential future amendment that could modify the provisions for that beach to allow a mix of boating, small craft, and swimmers. In the interim, though, the harbor has purchased some additional equipment that allows for the launching of small craft from their main ramp, and they have installed that equipment. So that is there in the interim. In the longer term, though, we expect that they would come back to us for a PWP amendment, but that has not yet occurred.
Thank you. Turning it back over to staff, any other responses?
No, Madam Chair.
We are adjourned.